Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Thought that that was hardcore, the secret arrest of Americans, the end of posse comitatus, military on the streets, the whole world a battlefield. If you thought all the announcements that they want to take your pension funds and put them into government control was bad, if you thought any of this MF global stuff was bad, this new piece of intel that came in today that we researched all day and then put an article out just an hour or so ago on or less, if you think that all of that was crazy, this little piece was a crystallizer, was a real indicator of just how serious things are. And what am I talking about? Well, there it is on screen right there. Exclusive government activating FEMA camps across America, across the United States. And of course, that's quite a headline. We have the emails, we have the internal Halliburton KBR documents, government defense and infrastructure, not for public eyes, restricted info sent to us by people in government. I'll just leave it at that. And it's got the five regions for the FEMA camps, and it talks about barricades and barbed wire and armed guards, and it says that they've built the camps. And that now they need to get ready to staff them. And that they need to be ready within a 72-hour period for the guards and the people in the canteen with the food and the launderers and just the whole nine yards. There it is. So they've been setting this up for more than two decades. And now they started earlier in the year, back in February of this year, advertising for upwards of 100,000 internment specialists here in the United States, and now we're learning where they'll be at. Now, this particular manning of the camp is your local sports stadium, your local FEMA center. These are 300-person camps to 1,000-person camps where they then interrogate you and go over things, and then you're sent off to the 1-million-man camps that we're going to be breaking down. But I tell you what, I did a whole report on this. Oh, thank you, Marcos. Appreciate that water. I've done a whole report on this that's coming up. But I suggest that you do what anybody with common sense, and of course our listeners, I think I have a little extra common sense, I would call your friends and family right now, and I would tell them to mosey on over to Infowars.com so they can see this information. And I would tell them to get this information, because it's a lengthy article that Kurt Nemo and I put together this afternoon. It goes over all of it. And it's got links to films, and congressional hearings, and admissions of all of this. And so I want to challenge everybody to call their friends and their families now and realize that the new economy is to put tens of millions of people, we already have the biggest prison population in the world, in this archipelago, this giant chain of facilities all over the country. Because it's all there. All the government documents, all the government admissions, a civilian inmate labor camp program run by the Army, where they're at, all the details down to how they're going to break the families up and where the children go and the forced inoculations and everything. The executive orders, the legislation, the congressional hearings. But I tell you, Glenn Beck used to giggle and laugh a couple years ago. He really enjoyed that. Where for over a month he built it up that I think FEMA camps are real. We've done an investigation and we're going to expose it on this date.
Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
We're live, ladies and gentlemen. It's the kickoff of another live worldwide broadcast. It is Wednesday, the 7th day of December 2011. It is the 70th anniversary of the Pearl Harbor attack by the Imperial Japanese. But we do have historian Webster Griffin Tarpley joining us. He's got a book coming out. It's not out yet, on what really happened at Pearl Harbor. It's a great example of a provocateur action. It's not saying the Imperial Japanese were good. It's just that U.S. proxy forces were attacking them in China, the Flying Tigers, mercenaries. The oil was cut off to Japan, and then the purple and blue code had been broken months before, and the United States did know the attack was coming. The Honolulu Advertiser, and I have a copy of it, an actual copy from the archives, did report a week before that the attack would come on the morning of December 7th. Honolulu Advertiser, still in operation today. And then they set up the generals and admirals and blamed them for it. When the aircraft carriers were put out to safe area, the old battleships allowed to be attacked. Not one, not two, not three, not four, but five. This is in my film Masters of Terror, the CNN article. Five Japanese midget subs were attacked in the process of trying to get there and launch attacks that morning in and around Pearl Harbor. So the military was ordered to stand down while submarines had already been engaged, because one hand didn't know what the other hand was doing, in one case 20 miles away from Pearl Harbor. And by the way, this has always been hidden in plain view. Whenever I went and years ago, but now it's giant. Now it's much bigger than it had been. Before, it was just Admiral Nimitz's boyhood home in Fredericksburg, Texas, a hotel his family owned that was shaped like a ship, with the prow of a ship and a conning tower. That was a Pacific War Museum. Then when it became the official National Pacific War Museum, the George H.W. Bush Museum, they built a huge complex, and it's a very world-class museum, by the way. I suggest you go there. They've got actual decommissioned, unarmed fat boys and little boy A-bombs. They've got it all there. But hiding in plain view is one of the midget subs from Pearl Harbor attack. So that was always hidden in plain view right there. And they paraded the sub around the country as well. And it was hidden in plain view. In the original news articles, you can read that they sunk it like an hour before the attack began. And still the stand down order happened. The Japanese are intercepted, attacked, and counterattacked, trying to get their attack into the Pearl Harbor with subs, basically suicide teams, on midget subs, pocket subs. All right, I'm now digressing, because this is 70 years ago, and it doesn't take away from the valor of our troops. It just shows how Imperial Japanese evil, U.S. government evil, Churchill evil. And then you get into that whole lesser of evils discussion. But it just shows the manipulation. Now, when they couldn't get the North Vietnamese to attack in 64, and they wanted to go ahead and kick off the official war that had just been advisors for 4 years, they said our destroyers were attacked in the Gulf of Tonkin. And then, of course, we were conspiracy theorists for decades talking about it until they declassified it on the 40th anniversary in 2004 and admitted it was all staged and a lie. Of course, sailors had come back and said it was a fraud. It had been in the San Diego Herald Tribune. It was a fraud when the first officer came out and said it was a fraud. But then that just became a rumor. People read the news, told people, but years later, well, I don't know where I heard it, but yeah, they say that was staged. That rumor, that legend, came from the admissions. Okay. Now, I digress here, but it is interesting that after Pearl Harbor, close to 100,000 Japanese who love the free market, freedom of America, and become wealthy on the West Coast, some of them over here over 100 years, owning shipping companies, fishing companies, restaurants, factories, warehouses from Seattle down to San Diego. But San Francisco was the big one. They owned farms. They owned grape vineyards. Their land was taken, and they were put into forced labor camps all over the West Coast. And they have come, I mean, that'd be like if we had a war with Mexico, arrest anybody who's got a Spanish surname. Or if we ever had a war with England, you know, my name's Jones, are you going to arrest me? If we had a war with Italy, it, you know, if your name is Monty, do you get arrested? Or if your name is, do you arrest somebody because their last name's Capone, because somebody named Capone did something wrong once? I mean, it's this idea of a black person commits a crime, so all black people are criminals, basically. Now, the reason I raise that is this news I've got for you is so big that I'm not even going to cover it right now. It is so big that I am not even going to get into it until we start the next segment. And I want to ask all of you to call your friends, to call your family, to call your neighbors, to tell the person next to you if you're on your lunch break in the Eastern time zone, sitting there eating your lunch, listening to the audio streams of InfoWars.com, of this radio show, or if you're watching us on PrisonPlanet.tv on your lunch break or whatever the case is, or if you're driving along in your squad car, or if you're driving along in your taxi listening, or if you're out on the ship, people listen on cruise ships. I've gotten phone calls from cruise ships or fishing ships. Wherever you are in the world, or ships at sea, I want you to tell the person next to you or to email your friends, tell your Facebook friends. If anybody still uses Facebook, kind of like MySpace. No, they do. I'm joking. Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, to tell everybody to tune in right now. In fact, I should put a Twitter out right now on my own, Real Alex Jones at Twitter, and tell people to tune in. You know, driving into work this morning, I was thinking, how do I properly address something this big? How do I give people all the points of the compass? How do I explain the serious magnitude of this and the fact that it is real and it is happening, and only by exposing it can we back them off? And then, of course, when it doesn't happen, we'll be blamed down the road. Oh, look, it didn't happen. And then, of course, I remember 5 years ago, we said they're on the verge of attacking Iran. They want to paint up speedboats like Iranian boats and stage attacks on the ships. That's what our CIA sources are saying. Came out 2 years later that indeed Cheney had begun to paint up the boats and had told the Navy SEALs to do it, but that higher ups, even above him, George Walker Bush, had told him no. And then they didn't get that attack launched, and so, oh, look, the attack never happened. You know, that's the point, is that now the attacks are going on, as we told you years ago, but now it's admitted, blowing up bases, assassinating, killing people, drones dropping bombs, huge bases being vaporized with what's clearly gigantic bombs, huge craters, and our media's like, oh, it's just some ammunition blew up. And then now they're like, okay, we're blowing stuff up in Iran. I mean, it's on. The war is already on. It's like I asked Wayne Madsen yesterday. I said, when's the war going to kick off? And he goes, it's already going on. That's why the Iranians are now threatening to go ahead and block the Strait of Hormuz. They don't like to look weak at the fact that they're taking attacks. So now they're kind of tacitly admitting it as well. And saying they may go ahead and block the Strait of Hormuz. So it'll basically double oil prices. All of this stuff is getting crazy. You've got the Russians there in the Mediterranean, delivering 76 hypersonic, super high-tech, giant cruise missiles, surface-to-ship, anti-ship weapons. You've got U.S. fleets that are missile cruisers that are carrying nukes building up all over the Gulf and all over the Mediterranean. You've got the Pakistanis blocking the U.S. route into Afghanistan, the main supply route. The Russians blocking the other route. The Pakistanis saying, get out of these military bases. The U.S. is starting to comply. The Russians are deploying weapons all over their borders. It is now confirmed that the Soros crowd has been trying to destabilize and have hack attacks and things in Russia during that election. And again, it's not that Putin and Medvedev are good either. It's different groups of mafias and global gangster systems. It's just that we're run by the most powerful mafia, the big mega banks, who are waging war against the free market, the Second Amendment, the family, the whole Homeland Security grid is for us. They finance the Muslim extremists. They finance Al-Qaeda. They protect them, along with Saudi Arabia. And now it's all admitted. Underwear bomber, U.S. government got him on the plane. Shoe bomber got him on the plane. Major Hassan, protected, run by Alaki, the known CIA operative who they staged his killing, totally phony. Al-Qaeda given Libya. Al-Qaeda sent into Syria. Al-Qaeda used against the Serbs. Al-Qaeda used against the Russians. It's all basically admitted now. And for anybody that even tries to study this, it's just all right there. More than you could ever even learn is there, hidden in absolute and total plain view. And I tell you, I have been so busy working on all this information that it's just overwhelming. And everything's coming to a head. Everything's accelerating. Everything's building up to a quickening right now. Now, we're going to go to break. And when we come back, I'm going to cover the two top stories at Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com that I need all of you, like never before, to get out to your whole email list and everyone you know and to all the big news sites and all the radio shows, because we've got to force this out into being a national story, and we've got to do it right now. Here are the headlines. We'll cover it when we come back. Detention camp order follows preparation for civil unrest. KBR seeks subcontractors to outfit emergency environment centers. They've already built the camps. Now they're trying to man them. Do you know what that means? Here's another headline, Infowars.com. Exclusive, government activating FEMA camps across the United States. Kurt Nemo and Alex Jones. We'll be right back breaking this down.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up.
Thank you for joining us. Let me get into our top story right now. And then we've got the Austin police chief, Art Acevedo, joining us in studio in the third hour. That should be interesting and informative. I'm told he's a little angry with me. He told my crew that when he saw him downtown a few months ago. And so this should be somewhat informative and also entertaining in a way. So Art Acevedo is going to come in here and give me a verbal lashing, I'm told. I guess he was listening when I called him a communist Cuban. My point is, he claims he's an anti-communist. And then he is our police chief, grew up in Cuba as a little kid, and then has checkpoints with blood draws at them and face scanning and license plate reading cameras. I mean, communism, fascism, whatever you want to call it, authoritarianism. All right, I'm digressing. Art Acevedo coming up. And then we've got... We've also got joining us Webster Tarpley, historian, to really break down 70 years later what really happened at Pearl Harbor. But we have our top story. And I'm going to break this down right now. I'm going to break down what we're facing and why this is such a big deal. And the article that Kurt Nemo and I put together yesterday afternoon details in a snapshot, in a six-page article, with video clips and links to government documents, exactly the type of camps they've built, where they are, and how they intend to roll them out to the public. And the admissions, the legislation, the congressional hearings, this is not theories. This is 100% proven. And they've had Glenn Beck come out a few years ago and for months say he was going to expose it and that it was real, and then come out and show straw men train facility that isn't a FEMA camp, and a North Korean facility that people took photos of on the web off satellite and said was the camps in America. Classic straw man. That's like saying, Alex says elephants exist. Let's go see. And you go walk out the front door in, say, Chicago, Illinois, or Austin, Texas, and there's no elephants in a field, and you say, therefore, there are no elephants. That doesn't prove it, but that's what they do. They go, oh, look at this. They say this is a FEMA camp. Some lady in the mid-90s did. It's not. Okay, there's no FEMA camp program. Well, what about this legislation? What about the Model States Health Emergency Powers Act for forced inoculation and mass roundup? Public. What about NLE09, the FEMA admitting they want to use troops from 15 countries to, quote, take on American terrorists? What about the New York Times with photo gallery showing Boy Scout Explorer Scouts in 2009 all over the country training to, quote, take on militias and disgruntled veterans and kill them? What about Obama and speeches about national security forces? What about all the see something, say something tattletale garbage and telescreens going in grocery stores and Walmarts? What about TSA and the regular army now setting up checkpoints all over the country? What about Congress passing a law that they can get rid of posse comitatus and have the military anywhere on the streets of America, talk about federal power grab, and have them pull triggers on American citizens and arrest citizens and never charge you? And then Stars and Stripes writes an article about Brigade Homeland and has a colonel quoted in there saying, yes, it'll be new for us pulling triggers on Americans. Or ABC News during Katrina gun confiscation. The Army captain, the reporter, says, what's it like? He goes, well, you pull a trigger and kill an American. It's not fun, but we go door to door and we take the guns. That cuts to the police chief saying, all the guns will be taken. No one will be allowed to be armed. Or the clergy response team newscast where they admit churches all over the country have been secretly hired by Homeland Security to tell their flocks to go to FEMA camps when the time comes and take the injections. Of course, we broke that 3 years before it was on the news. People didn't believe the documents. It was, oh, they wouldn't train preachers. 10,000 plus churches. That was the first wave. Now it's hundreds of thousands. They've gone to even the small ones, training them to spy on their flocks. It's right out of Red Dawn. When the Soviets occupy, that's what they do. You cannot make up the magnitude of this. Now, we're going to break. Long segment coming up. I'm just going to read the article that Kurt and I did and Watson's article. And you need to get this out to everybody. I know people are tuning in right now in mass. We're going to come back and give you the full report. Exclusive. Government activating FEMA camps across the United States. Now, they expanded them and publicly built more under a Kellogg Brown Root Halliburton contract, Wall Street Journal, Houston Chronicle, 2006. And that's all linked in here. And we showed the articles last time on the Nightly News. Now they are going forward in every state to activate them with contractors running them. Stay with us. We'll be back.
I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man. Thomas Jefferson. It's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Okay, I'm going to boil this down real simply and then read these articles and give you even more backstory to give you full spectrum analysis and breakdown on what we're facing. Criminal corporate financial oligarchs made major inroads by financing J.P. Morgan, the Rockefellers, and others in the 1860s and forward. The robber barons then controlled the Western expansion. They set up monopolies and ever since then put out public reports that we've covered and posted and had historians on about, breaking down the fact that they wanted to overthrow our Republican form of government, our constitutional republic. This is historical fact. They didn't even try to hide it. They financed eugenics, which meant survival of the fittest. They believed it was their right to rule, dominate, kill whoever they want. If they can do it, that gives them the right. Might makes right. They already believed they were gods. They were financed by the Rothschilds and the British royalty and Dutch royalty. That's the main power centers of the Western system. The Vatican plays into that to a certain extent, especially more in modern times. But that main power structure and that system of governance came out of England. The concentration camp was invented on the Native Americans, picked up by the British after that. Now, they have gone for global financial domination by building giant bubbles of currency and derivatives garbage that is backed up by the U.S. military and U.S. taxpayers. They got the whole world to buy into it. And now they're saying, go along with what we say or we'll totally implode the world economy overnight. They've said it publicly in every country, the U.S. in 2008, right through Iceland, right through Greenland, right through Ireland, right through Greece, now into Spain, into Portugal. Portugal's raiding private pension funds. They're now taking private pension funds, bringing them into government control, and taking a large portion of it and calling it government protection of the funds. That's in Der Spiegel and Associated Press last night. And it's the same banks. When you hear about European banks, that's U.S. banks. That's globalist banks. That's the six big mega banks that we're dealing with. Now, they've committed this takeover. On the way up, when the bubble was expanding, they bought up the planet, paid people off. Now they're holding the planet hostage, saying, give us unlimited trillions. They call them bailouts. The media then turns it around and acts like the public owes this money. But they're really not even bailouts. It's lies within lies. It is direct global taxes to the six megabanks through their international consortiums of the IMF and World Bank and the U.S. arm, the Federal Reserve. The World Bank is more of the U.S. arm internationally of the Federal Reserve, but it's all interconnected. The IMF is mainly European and international as you go to the east. This is all Trilateral Commission breakdown information. It's all public. The stuff, they think you're stupid. They think you don't care. They hide it in plain view for anybody that cares. Their architecture, their battle plans are all there because they think so little of you because they know you're designed to face a foreign enemy who wears a uniform and comes at you with a rifle and a bayonet, not someone that comes at you in business suits. Okay, so we're continuing with economic hitmen before I get into this huge FEMA camp news. You have to understand why it's happening. They are now admitting that the private banks have dominated Europe through fraud. Our media, bought and paid for by them, hails it as cutesy. They sit there and giggle about it on Bloomberg TV and radio. They giggle about it on CNBC. Oh, how it's undemocratic. How Europe won't never be able to vote its way out of this now. Getting rid of all of their sovereignty. How the euro was only the receivership arm, now they're going to implode that scaffolding and bring it fully under banker control with value-added taxes, sales taxes, carbon taxes, family taxes, total social control, shutting off economies for social engineering. They want you dependent, period. Global plantation. Now, patriots discovered this in the 1950s and 60s, namely Joseph McCarthy, who was demonized and who did have problems like anybody, and who did, they allowed him to persecute innocent people because that created a new form of censorship in the name of countering communism, which actually brought us into authoritarianism in the name of fighting another authoritarianism. It was a Hegelian dialectic of problem, reaction, solution. But the minute he discovered, I'm getting chills right now, this has even been in the New York Times and Moscow Times now, the minute he discovered that the Pentagon was funding the Russians, and that the Pentagon and Arm & Hammer and the Rothschilds and Rockefellers were running it all so that Russia had a pretext to clamp down, and so we had a pretext to be clamped down on, but that it was all a huge Hegelian dialectic of full-spectrum dominance, the minute he said that, they destroyed him. In the hearings, they said, you're saying the army's doing this. Now, in hindsight, they've declassified the GRU and KGB files 5 years ago. International headlines, McCarthy was right. It was all true. But again, it's cutesy. It's all very cutesy. But because of people warning the population and understanding it, and understanding that mega-rich want socialism and communism and collectivism and communitarianism and Agenda 21 for the general public to make us dependent on them, they sit international and are exempt from that and are exempt from taxes, as you see. Then they lobby for more taxes, telling the poor you'll get wealth redistribution with all this conspicuous consumption that they see and are licking their lips for, if you get rid of the middle class, who the poor believe is rich. They're actually the only group still employing the poor, still buying things from them. That service economy must be eradicated, and it is. This is a philosophy of total degradation. Now I will give you the top news. My point is, the globalists have been very arrogant and very out in the open in their white papers about vaccines that sterilize, fluoride in the water to increase cancer, lower fertility, dumb everybody down. They have all been very honest about this because they have total contempt for you. total contempt that you're not going to go read that because it's not, you know, the latest sitcom or drama or woman show or men's soap opera, you know, that, you know, basically is football. They think that you deserve it. And so they just hide it in plain view. But because the globalists know that when they bring in this total collapse, people are going to get angry. There's going to be a move to restore the republic. There's going to be a move to unroot them that have engineered this publicly, that they have built FEMA camps. They have continuity of government programs. They have mass arrest programs. They've tried to train the military and police to go along with this. They federalized things. They've put in the surveillance grid. And they've got different ways they can roll it out. A staged bio attack, a staged chemical attack, other terror attacks, mass shootings blamed on domestic groups. They've got a whole constellation of systems they can use to psyop people into going along with this. Because they've committed these crimes, they've committed this economic espionage, this economic invasion, this economic program of globalization, deindustrialization, and all of it, so they can consolidate all power and leave no enemy standing. They see anybody with a business, anybody independent, as the enemy. It's a scorched earth policy of kill the buffalo, let the red man starve. It's a scorched earth policy. Research what that is. Now, we have checkmated them at many levels because we saw their program, warned people, got laughed at. We didn't care. Now, as it's beginning to come true, the credibility is rising. But that by no means means we're winning the war for liberty. It just means we're in the fight. And if you're in the fight, you've always got a chance to win. You've got to know your enemy. You've got to be motivated. You've got to do the research. You've got to be focused, and you've got to be dedicated. If we're going to beat these people, but we got the jump on them. They got the original jump on us as the offensive attackers. But because it was a covert operation they were running against us, many people recognized it, mainly in government, in Congress, in the military, and warned people. The old days, they'd kill you for this. Now they failed containing it. The information's out there, so they just went ahead and have gone forward with a program of just letting it all be out in the open and trying to hide it in plain view. So because they're aware that we're awake to them and that the Federal Reserve is now the enemy, and as Brzezinski said last year, the whole world is for the first time awake politically and recognizing the puppet masters, not the puppets, they're just going ahead and flaunting it now. Yeah, we'll secretly arrest you. Yeah, we'll use the military on the streets with the NDAA. Notice more and more shoes are dropping. More and more red flags are going up. More and more balloons are going up. The system is testing this right now, right as the world economy begins to accelerate its implosion, right as the world government's announced. I'm getting nonstop chills here. I mean, we are entering history right now. And only by getting the word out about this information, and only by being strong enough to admit what's happening and to speak out to others and to say no when you're in the military and if you're a police officer, are we going to be able to turn this around? America has been seized by very nasty technocratic social engineers who think of us as trash and who are totally bloodthirsty and ruthless. Now, why am I so freaked out? We know under Rex 84 they began to build FEMA camps in the 80s. Even before that, they started them under Eisenhower. That was declassified. He spoke out against it and said, I'm not doing this. And he was an establishment guy, but not a total, you know, tyrant. He said, beware the military-industrial complex, beware their domestic takeover, beware the technological elite that controls it. That's the full quote. We've played the video here, the film. You always hear about beware the military-industrial complex. He said that's controlled by a new technological elite. He was brought in on all this eugenic stuff and polio, cancer viruses and the polio vaccine. All of this that we now know, the president was shown that. That's why he's so freaked out. When he gives that speech, something slams, a door slams, and you see him jump like he's about to be killed. He knew what he was doing there, going off script, warning people, because he had a conscience as an old man. He'd already gotten all the power. He wasn't pure evil. And so he was thinking, I did all this, and now I'm here, and future generations are going to be committed to this. So because we saw the warnings, And because people like McCarthy, you can look at him in hindsight and laugh at him, think of what he knew then. We didn't know as much then, 60, 70 years ago. Because of that, we got a chance to make some preparations for the final phases of this. We knew because of the creeping death formation of it that it would take time for it to manifest to where the sheep would finally see it. So we had to keep telling them what was going to come next so that when it did uncloak to fire, people could recognize the enemy and would be at the switch to fire back at it. And it's when the globalists emerge, uncloak, when they finally make their big move, is that that's when we're in the greatest danger and they're in the greatest danger. And they're uncloaked right now. And if they can acclimate us to accept it, and well, some people go to the camp, you know, they're troublemakers. We got to do what we do during the Depression and the Iran War. If we don't put maximum effort in now that they're uncloaked, they're going to complete the takeover. And then everything that follows, and all the people that say, well, I don't have anything to hide. I haven't done anything wrong. So what do we have a tyranny? The tyranny wants your labor, wants your money, wants your life. It doesn't matter if you serve them or not. It doesn't matter if you go along with them. Don't you get it? You don't make a deal with these people. You can't. That's the big con game for police and military. Cops call me and say, well, I've chosen a side. And you do need to choose a side. But it's a spiritual decision. But if you look at it and have discernment, there was no choice. Of course you say no to evil. Because that's the big trick. You can't make a deal with it. So the criminals that have taken over know that we're going to get angry and try to bring them to justice and get our government back. And they're not going to let that happen. They're going to try to bring in a hardcore tyranny. People who don't think it can't happen here, look at how much has already happened. Well, I'm telling you, it is all going to happen. So it's time to get right with God, and then it's time to take action. Now, remember this article from earlier in the year? Internment Resettlement Special 31E, GoArmy.com, where they wanted to hire upwards of 100,000 for in the U.S. and overseas jail guards and people to be internment and resettlement specialists, including here in the United States. Now, that's on the Army website. Now, let's fast forward. They had a major camp and former base closure refurbishment, $386 million, Market Watch of the Wall Street Journal reported, for KBR, Kellogg Brown and Root, Division of Halliburton, to build 3 1-million-man camps at former military bases. Now they've built over 500 in the states, this is all documented, substations to round up 300 to 1,000 at a time, and then to interrogate, debrief, decide if you're released or sent to the larger center or sent to a black site for execution. Of course, the locals don't know that, but we've gotten internal documents, memorandum, and now they admit there is kill orders as well. And they've said we'll kill citizens. The White House said that last week. And they got kill teams ready. So it's good to know this up front, just because if they launch it, you're going to a death camp, many of you. So there's no point. You're dead already. You got to resist. You understand that, okay? Don't go like the poor Jews and run down in the pit with the women with the babies in their arms and the Nazis just shoot them in the back of the head, okay? Just understand, as we go to this red level, you got to understand, we tried to avert this as best we could, and we may still do it. But it's real, and it's here, and it's not, they'll probably beta test on Arabs and then some militias, and then it's going to be for everybody. They always roll it out on a minority first. Now, continuing, exclusive, government activating FEMA camps across the U.S. So they built all these things and expanded them in the last few decades. Now they're putting out the contracts in all 50 states for, in some cases, more than 30 camps per state, just as processing centers. Checkpoints at the highway, put you in army trucks, take you to the facility. Then you're shipped off to another facility, you're dieseled, you're taken. And they're ready. Brigade Homeland, Northcom, foreign troops, foreign assets, mercenaries, it's on. Infowars.com has received a document originating from Halliburton subsidiary KBR that provides details of a push, and it's a hidden KBR link. They have a link to it. I mean, it was a hidden private link, but it's on their site right now, to outfit FEMA and U.S. Army camps around the United States, entitled Project Overview and Anticipated Project Requirements. And it goes on to say they need fences and barricades, and it goes into all the security officers and things. Laundry, food, everything. Within 72 hours, notice, at hundreds of locations, they're now going to government fund in the billions of dollars the actual manning of the camps. So the camps are going live. They have got operatives in every city ready to go live with the camps, with private contractors running it, getting their 20 pieces of silver, 30 pieces of silver, and with local government, all the systems ready for the economic collapse, the riots, all of it. They're going to let all that roll out and let the public beg for it. And they're going to, as we learned from the Emergency Centers Establishment Act, put the homeless in them first. They're going to have movies, rock and roll music. It's going to, the camps are going to be rolled out now.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Now, from congressional hearings and other pieces of information we had, we were able to piece together exactly how the FEMA camps were set up, the old military bases, the drills, the insider information. And we knew that they would try to roll it out as they imploded the economy as a place for all the homeless to go. All those that have been kicked out of their houses and the new giant criminal populations. And if Mexico collapses, they admit plans to put millions of people in these facilities on the borders. So it's a constellation of different overlaying cover stories or a cocktail of different things. And in Nazi Germany, it was first, well, you're not allowed to have your businesses in this area because you're one of these groups that we have to protect from the public. And now you can't even have your business. And now you're going to live in a ghetto. And then the Nazis would go in and pick up every day whoever they wanted on a list at checkpoints. And then, oh, you're going to a camp where you can be kept safe and you're going to work for a living. And then they were really death camps. So, see, it was always the cover story. It was always the hope that everything was going to be all right. And the Soviets did the same thing. And they killed even more people in these camps than the Nazis did, because they went on for decades and decades longer. And that's how they're rolling them out. You read the Emergency Centers Establishment Act, and it explains it to you. And if they roll it out, it'll be on the news. Oh, look at the hundreds of thousands of homeless at this facility. Oh, now there are some troublemakers who get locked up, and they do have to search people, and there are fences around them. But, you know, it's for everybody's safety. And, oh, there were some more domestic attacks. We do have some camps for criminals and extremists. And in this article, we have the new government documents where they say protesting, period, is terrorism. They tell the cops the First Amendment is terrorism. I have links to it in the article. And so this is the attitude. They're not putting telescreens up for wanted people everywhere and giant signs and FEMA national break-ins over radio and TV for the first time activated with total federal control because they're nice people. And this is such a big deal that they have now come out in the news. Well, this information was leaked to us, so we're breaking it. But that they are now activating and saying, you've got to be on 72-hour standby. We're going to pay you to be ready to man the camps. And they're paid basically half the money just to sit there and be ready. And then even more once they man the camps. And it's a giant business. And Halliburton, of course, that's been caught running slave camps. Chicago Tribune reported on that. All over the world. And they just grab locals, Philippines, you name it, just put them in camps, making bricks, aluminum, you name it. I mean, this is literally a devilish group, Halliburton and KBR. And they've been chosen to be the master camp operators. And you know, they helped set up camps in Iraq and Afghanistan. And they're setting up that same system. They got giant armies of military that are now cops that are here ready to do it. Ready to retina scan you at that checkpoint, check who you really are, ready to load you on that truck. Okay, then you need to put your hands behind your back. We're going to send you in for some questioning. And then they don't have to worry. I don't know where he's going. Just get on down the road. This is the government we have. And if you don't think they're not planning it, think again. They've always hated America. The globalists have always wanted to take us down, and it's on. So we need to get these articles out to everybody. Detention camp order follows preparations for civil unrest. It's all admitted. KBR seeks subcontractors to outfit emergency environment centers. And we have the other one, exclusive government activating FEMA camps across U.S. This is so important. I'm going to spend about 15 minutes with Tarpley on this subject when we come back, because he's an expert on it as well. Before we get into Pearl Harbor 70 years later, then Chief Arde Saveda, Austin Police Chief, is going to be in studio. By the way, over here, where this is going to end on Christmas, and if you order by the 19th, it's guaranteed delivery to you. All 18 of my films on DVD and bumper stickers, citizen rule book, and more, $99.95. That's 70% off, a $260 discount. Get them. Get the word out to everybody.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
All right, Webster Griffin Tarpley, who's a historian and also economist, frequent contributor to the show, has been researching for years and writing a book that isn't out yet on Pearl Harbor, its 70th anniversary. And we're going to speak, coming up in about 20 minutes, with Webster about Pearl Harbor. Then I'm going to open the phone up for World War II vets. Now, there's not many of those great men and women, some of them left, but if you can get involved on air, we're going to open the phones up just for you after Tarpley gets into some of the basics of Pearl Harbor and parallels that we see today. But going to Webster, I'm springing this on you because it's breaking, and a lot of times when something's this big, I end up just canceling guests till the next day, but I wanted to have you on because you can speak to this. We got quasi-secret documents, and we've confirmed them, from KBR, Kellogg Brown and Root, subsidiary of Halliburton, who admittedly runs camps all over the world.
Right.
And we know that 6 years ago they got the $386 million contract for 3 1-million-man camps, source on that Wall Street Journal. Now I've been sent something, we're breaking it, where they're now getting ready to man them, the big camps and the little camps. And it says barricades, barbed wire, jail, you know, the jail guards, the food services, for a collapse. And it's huge news. We're trying to punch it out there to everybody. You see the NDAA passing where they could secretly arrest citizens, use the military. I mean, classical, off-the-chart authoritarianism. We see just all the military accelerations. I mean, things are going into high gear. But the fact that they're actually putting out the contracts to now man the camps. I mean, is this not incredible, Webster? What does this signify to you that they're saying 72-hour notice, these people are paid lavish amounts, subcontractors, to be ready to provide this to the master company, KBR, within 72 hours? I'm not saying it's going to happen in 72. They're now signing up to always be ready. What does that sound like to you, Webster?
Well, we know that we're in a depression. We are in this terrible breakdown crisis or disintegration of the world economy. Last week, on Wednesday, we came close to blowing out the entire thing. We had three big Euro zombie banks, reportedly Commerzbank of Germany, Unicredito of Italy, and one French bank, maybe Societe Generale, maybe Crédit Agricole, it's not known. But this has been reported by reliable European sources. And that joint action of the six central banks you saw last week, right? The U.S., the Europeans, Japan, Canada, Britain, Switzerland, all making it easier for zombie banks to borrow money, was in response to the fact that the bottom was about to fall out. And now we have Merkel and Sarkozy trying to ram through this lunatic austerity corset, as they call it in Britain. It's a kind of a straitjacket that says everybody has to have a balanced budget or thereabouts. And of course, this is a very evil plan. So remember, we're always in this three phase problem: depression leading to dictatorship, leading to then the war, and we're seeing the dictatorship and the war come in at the same time.
And that's the pattern of history. It always happens. People marvel that you and I and others have accurately, Ron Paul, predicted things, but this is the course of human events.
Yeah, except you can stop it, except there's nothing fatal about this. There is no destiny at any point, up until the point of total dictatorship, I suppose. You can intervene in this and stop the crash. There's nothing sacred about the crash. What has to happen to a depression? You have to fight it. And we know how to do this. We know from our experience in the 1930s and 1940s. We know from New Deal, Lend-Lease, and other things.
The point is, Webster, even if you're right about that political and financial strategy, it's not going to be implemented. They want the collapse. They want to use the collapse to reorganize society along the eugenics model, and they're going to do it. So the question is, what do
maybe the news of these concentration camps will shake through a couple of
So I want to break the concentration camps down with you. Then we'll get into 70 years yesteryear, because those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. Doctor of History, Webster Griffin Tarpley, is our guest. Tarpley.net, GCNLive.com.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Okay, doctor of history, also economist, Webster Tarpley, joins us for the balance of the hour. We're going to get into 70 years after the tragic events of Pearl Harbor, what really happened there. He's been researching it for years. There's a book coming out on the subject. Then Austin Police Chief Arde Cepeda is scheduled to be in here. In fact, he'll be here soon. Here's the big headline at Infowars.com. Exclusive government activating FEMA camps across the United States, a project overview and anticipated project requirements, the same subsidiary of Halliburton that got the 3 1 million man camp funding. This all ties into the Emergency Centers Establishment Act. It sets up fencing, barricades, and prepares teams all over the country to be on 72-hour notice to activate and staff the camps. So they just sit there on standby and are waiting. This is a major escalation, right as the global depression comes in, right as the economies melt down, right as the bankers and the zombie banks get more power out of the crisis they created. And this also dovetails with the other article by Paul Joseph Watson. Detention camps order follows preparations for civil unrest. The U.S. government, the British government, we have links to that, are in the news saying they're getting ready for civil unrest. Oh, they've passed a law where the army can operate and arrest whoever they want for any reason. And they say activism, protesting is terror. What did Kennedy say? Those that make peaceful political activity illegal make violence.
Make revolution inevitable.
Yeah. So it's making revolution inevitable. KBR seeks subcontractors to outfit emergency environment centers. And it's for political, it's for environmental. I mean, this is such a giant escalation. We can see it everywhere, Webster. What's your view on this?
Well, I would say, first of all, what to do about it is why doesn't Ron Paul and Congressman Kucinich or some combination like that, something that a bipartisan group, why can't we get a resolution in the House of Representatives condemning preparations under Obama for domestic dictatorship and make some noise about that. The other thing to do is, you have these Republican candidates campaigning in Iowa and New Hampshire, and if people are there, this is a golden opportunity to confront them. Hey, Newt Gingrich, what do you think about concentration camps? Hey, Romney, what do you think about them? Hey, Bachman, hey, Santorum, all of them, right? What do you think about them? Give Ron Paul a chance to say something about it and condemn it. In other words, let's get a political campaign going, and let's also make sure that international attention is called to this, right? That people in the world should know that the concentration camps are being readied. Perhaps one other thing, right, to segue into Pearl Harbor. The question of the Japanese being rounded up, the Japanese, the Nisei so-called, the Japanese Americans, particularly in the West Coast states, California and so forth, that was ordered really not by Roosevelt, but by a guy called Colonel Henry Stimson. And his friend was John J. McCloy. Now, once I've said these two names, Stimson and McCloy, I have identified the leaders, the deans of the Wall Street faction in the 1930s, 40s, into the 60s, and even the 70s. And it was in particular Stimson, acting on advice of McCloy, who said to Roosevelt, you are going to put concentration camps up and you're going to put the Japanese in them. And this, of course, you have to remember, these people are Republicans. In other words, they're people that Roosevelt brought into the government in June of 1940 after the fall of France. He wanted to have a national unity government, a bipartisan government. So he had to invite in these Republican Wall Street guys who ran the Pentagon, in effect, the War Department. They were not creatures of Roosevelt. They were Wall Street guys, and they acted as Wall Street guys always did. This is the group that's responsible for dropping the atomic bomb. Roosevelt, of course, dead by that time.
And Webster, let's expand. The National Japanese American Group's head has come out and condemned the NDAA and the camps that are being built. We haven't gotten a response now that this came out. I mean, things are certainly escalating. But this shows that the establishment thinks the total collapse is right around the corner. It's one thing to build all these camps and have a mothballed sitting there. That's bad enough. Now, for the first time ever, they're saying, okay, these aren't bids to build them. These are bids to man them. I mean, I don't think people out there realize the magnitude. And I agree with you. Everybody needs to go to their police chiefs, their county commissioners, their sheriffs. They need to go to all of them and point out, okay, they're passing laws that the army can be used. They can secretly arrest us. Obama's lawyers, you know, say, we're not going to sign that because we're going to veto it because Obama doesn't need Congress to do this. But we do agree we can still do it. The army admitting they're ready for domestic operations, the TSA running checkpoints. I mean, clearly they're getting ready to try to clamp down on the population, just like it's happening in Europe. And most economists, Webster, say the U.S. is worse off than Europe once the collapse comes here. And they think that they can ride this dragon, this tiger that they've created. But great ideas. We've got to make a major movement out of this and say, look, I mean, this one article that Kurt Nimmo and I wrote last night, it breaks down all the admissions, the bills, the Congress, the maps, where they're at. It's total proof that this is going on. And you add it to all this other stuff and the Japanese group in America coming out and warning. I mean, this is so serious. What does this signify for you, though, Webster, that they are going ahead and now moving to man the camps?
Well, this is that three-phase progression that we saw in the 1930s. And as long as you have protracted depression getting worse as the phases go on, unless you stop the depression, there's really very little you can do about this other stuff. Naturally, we want to do a lot in terms of denouncing the totalitarianism and the dictatorship. How about getting a committee of distinguished people, right? Emergency committee against dictatorship in the United States, and try to get bipartisan, writers, scientists, humanitarians, college presidents. Who knows, right? Who knows what you can get? Have a white paper that's drawn up, right? The actual. I think what's been missing is really a book about concentration camps in the U.S. in our time. I'm not sure that story has ever really been told. But to have a press conference here at the National Press Club in Washington, you get foreign press in particular. I'm sure the way the wind is blowing right now, Russia, China, Syria, Iran, they would all be there. They would all be interested in that and get the story out. It's a worldwide campaign against that. But having said all that, if you really want to stop this, you got to go to the cause. You got to go for the matador, not the cape. You got to go for the cause, not the symptoms. And that would mean, for example, the cause of this is the zombie banks. In other words, it's, as I tried to show, it's the collapse of the zombie banks last week, in particular, the three big Euro zombies. That's where the crisis comes from. In other words, that's why we've got austerity. And then the killer austerity leads to people going out in the streets, and then the response is, let's send the SWAT teams and let's start rounding people up and putting them in the sports stadium like Pinochet. So you got to have an economic program to fight dictatorship, because otherwise you're just fighting the symptoms, which, of course, have to be fought.
Continue.
Well, it means you've got to essentially see where it's all coming from, and the problem that we're facing is in Europe. Right, we're told that they need $3 trillion. Where does all this come from? What you're talking about there is derivatives, right? The derivatives have caused the bankruptcy of these zombie banks. We know that the European zombie banks are loaded with collateralized debt obligations that they got in 2007, 2008. They're still sitting there. So that's got to be canceled. You got to say, look, you know, we can't afford derivatives anymore. You know, we got to be able to afford pensions and food stamps and unemployment benefits. But derivatives, sorry, we can't afford that. We got to afford some kind of national defense at some level. But derivatives, not. Who needs derivatives? Nobody can eat them, live in them. You can't use them. They're not a tool. They're
not
a house.
All right, Webster, let me stop you to put this in layman terms for myself and others. Look, obviously, this is the progression of collapse, dictatorship, and then finally the dictatorship to stay in power, war. That's always the process. The world, just like before World War I, World War II, is hurtling into this same quagmire bygone. But now the social engineers, whether they're right or wrong, believe that they have engineered this and are going to be able to ride this out. So it is a planned program. And I understand that as things collapse, that leans towards dictatorship, but they want this post-industrial, as you've exposed, eugenics-style shutdown and then reengineering of our society. So the point I raise here is as Europe collapses, then as the U.S. collapses, obviously they think, okay, man the camps for social unrest, but they already had the camps built. They knew this was coming. What is the time frame right now as this global meltdown accelerates in your research?
Well, again, we had a big worldwide disintegration, a systemic crisis in September, October, November of 2008. So that's 3 years ago now. But now, as of last Wednesday, we're in a super Lehman. We basically had three Lehman brothers, three Euro zombies playing the role of Lehman. And of course, that's triple trouble. The other problem you have is U.S. is depressed. Europe is headed into recession. We've got the credit agencies attacking Europe. This is amazing. Standard & Poor's is now attacking 15 European countries simultaneously. They say to France and even to Germany, guess what? We're going to downgrade you. I'm amazed that some police agency, some independent judge or magistrate doesn't start indicting.
Sure, because these ratings agencies openly work for the big six megabanks that are taking the sovereign nations over and want things to get worse, threatening, give the banks all the power or we'll implode you. And then somehow the media tells the public this is our debt when almost all of it is the megabanks' debt. And then now in Portugal, I want to talk about this. They've publicly started taking private pension funds. That was in the news yesterday. I mean, it is so crazy. And if you don't like it, you go to a FEMA camp. We'll be right back.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows.
We've got another article up at Infowars.com by Kurt Nemo. Gingrich advocates trashing Fourth Amendment and Bill of Rights, and he even jokes in the C-SPAN video from a couple years ago that somebody dug up. He even brags that, hey, it'd be good to let some terror attacks take place so people will give their rights up. Incredibly creepy. But when you research this stuff, it's so obvious what's going on. It's so obvious what our society has turned into. I want to do the second half of the interview on Pearl Harbor and the 7th anniversary on your deep research there, Webster. But I'm sure you saw the articles yesterday out of Der Spiegel and others where they were talking about Portugal taking private pension funds. This isn't getting rid of them welfare people's money, like everybody says. This is the megabanks taking people's pension funds, taking a large part of them, and then saying the government now manages them and will give you what we feel like you should get. But it's a one-off, they're saying, to prop up banks. And then, of course, you've done the math on this. It's over 1,500 quadrillion, 1,500 trillion. It's all derivatives. We don't owe it. And you could feed everything into it. It won't pay it off. So, I mean, how much are they going to get away with?
Well, in Portugal, we had austerity under the socialists. I think we're now under a different leadership. But it just shows you, once you go down the road of austerity and cuts and balancing the budget, you're going to lose everything, and you're going to lose your political rights. Let me also say, though, with the Anglo-Americans, right, London, Washington, these characters, the thing that's scaring them most right now is Putin. The fact that Putin is back and Russia is back, and we've got, you know, 6 or 8 conflict points, from Syria to the anti-ballistic missiles to Hillary Clinton shooting off her yap about the Russian elections and getting a really blunt invitation to, you know, go mind her own business from the Russian foreign minister. Right now we've got a kind of a fake, it's like a mini color revolution in the streets of Moscow, put up there by by the U.S., by the British, but Gorbachev has joined in, right? Gorbachev has shown what he was made of all along, that he was basically a foreign agent wrecking the Soviet Union back when he did. And they all say, oh, no, this election is not legitimate. This was the parliament now. The interesting thing is they say the United Russia lost votes in the parliamentary election, and that's Putin's fault. Wait a minute. Putin was not on the ballot. Who was on the ballot was Medvedev. So it's a vote against the cowardice and the appeasement and the weakness of Medvedev. I think when you see Putin run, he'll get a very satisfactory vote. But in the meantime, this phase of the two elections, right, the parliamentary election now and the presidential election next March, the U.S. and the British think they can make trouble for Russia. They're going to try to get in there and do something, maybe a cyber offensive like we've never seen it in history, or a false flag, right? Some bomb goes off and somebody says, oh, that's the KGB, and we know that the KGB means Putin, so we know Putin did it. Something really wild is, I think, in the works, because what we've been talking about up to now, the U.S. British ruling class is berserk. They're bonkers. They're collectively insane, right? Mad as hatters, mad as March hares, whatever you want to say. They're ready for just about anything because their capital structures are collapsing. And we now see this pole of resistance.
Well, I was about Russia, to add, China, they're bombing military Iran, bases in Pakistan. The Russian
and Iran.
The Russians are moving their fleet into the Mediterranean with nukes.
Exactly.
And on top of that, the president of China has said, prepare for war with the U.S. publicly. I mean, that is an incredible escalation.
I think it's a realistic statement, unfortunately, at this point. But the problem is the drugged, inert, U.S. public doesn't seem to register these things. So it's of course, necessary to beat the drum about all this. But the strategic reality
now is...
Yeah, but
China, I mean, it's been decades since they said prepare for war with the United States. I mean, that was Associated Press yesterday, but wasn't even really a big nightly news item. I mean, Russia's got ships coming in. The Chinese are threatening because they know they're about to have their oil cut off, just like the Japanese did pre-Pearl Harbor. By cutting off the Iranian oil, the Iranians are saying they're going to block the Strait of Hormuz if these sanctions go in. I mean, boy, the world is. No wonder they're getting ready to staff the FEMA camps.
It's Christmas on the brink, right? And maybe New Year's in a FEMA camp after Christmas on the brink.
Well, there's got to be a way to back this off.
That's no future for the United States, right? The American people reject
that. Well, all
that
because problem. The bankers had to create $1,000 trillion in fake derivatives and sell it to everybody, all because a bunch of bankers who make 40-to-1 bets and think they're invincible want to play God? I mean, this is never an end to them?
When your country is being turned into a 21st century banana republic police state, silence isn't golden, it's yellow. You are listening to Alex Jones broadcasting live from the front lines. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
We're going back to Webster Griffin Tarpley here in a moment. Look, we can back off the globals. We can stop them from launching these new wars. We can expose the private Federal Reserve and the mega banks. We can move to claw back the trillions they've stolen. We can break the hoax that we owe this money that the mainstream media spends all day trying to convince us of. We can also toot our horn and say, we told you it'd be a bank of the world, private banking dictatorship. Now the media brags that's what Goldman Sachs has set up. It's all happening. It's all coming true. And as things get crazier and crazier, every person we wake up, every person we reach out to, every person who we don't even wake up at that point will wake up later. Now, I'm running a special right now at Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com that we're going to have until Christmas. And that's all 18 of my films on DVD, all 18 of them, for $99.95. I've never offered anything near that. And if you order by the 19th, it's guaranteed that it'll be delivered to your home. Also, something we've now got is an excellent new film, a lot of amazing interviews, A Noble Lie, Oklahoma City, proving that that's a false flag event to be blamed on domestic groups. That's available at Infowars.com as well. You can also call toll-free 888-253-3139. That's 888-253-3139. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 19549, Austin, Texas, 78760. And it is your purchase of the books and the videos and the T-shirts and all of it that makes this transmission possible. Plus, the T-shirts get the word out. You meet like-minded people wearing InfoWars shirts or some of the other anti-New World Order shirts we've got. Obviously, the videos, I want you to make copies of the films that I've produced and get them out to everybody you know. Air them on Access TV. Films are really a great way to wake people up, especially the Obama deception or Fall of the Republic. And it's all available at InfoWars.com. And through Christmas, as we do every year, we do this every year, we're offering 44% off on a yearly membership at PrisonPlanet.tv. That's 5.3 months is what you get free. You pay for 6.7 months. So 44% off on a PrisonPlanet.tv yearly membership. It will be 9 years we've had the site this April. All of my films, expanded extras, so many other special reports, the nightly news show, this radio slash TV show that's Alex Jones Live, the big show, what we're doing right now. All of it is there. The higher quality podcast, 15 cents a day, and you're supporting the heart of the growing alternative media, PrisonPlanet.tv. And then we're able to support over the years Ron Paul, Webster Tarpley, Gerald Celente, you know, so many countless other guests that find another platform here on this transmission. So again, PrisonPlanet.tv. And also don't forget our local AM and FM stations to support their local sponsors and spread the word as well. Okay, Webster, I want to finish up with the geopolitical and then get to 70 years later after Pearl Harbor from your deep research, what really happened there. How all of this ties together at our point in history. But anything else you'd like to add about currently what's happening financially? And if things do continue down this road, where we'll be 6 months from now?
Well, the depression comes in waves. The first wave was in 2008. We're now in the middle, we're in the real soup of the second wave. And as you were saying before, if you get one, two, or three Euro zombies blowing up, then it's going to come right back to Citibank, Bank of America, and the rest of the Wall Street zombies, who, of course, despite what the networks tell you, are not fundamentally stronger than the European.
Well, they're
banks.
Not they're even bailing out Europe. Thing. It's now admitted that most of this is actually stuff they did in Europe. They're bailing themselves out.
Yeah, and of course we have, you know, Europe now under Goldman Sachs dictatorship. Draghi, the head of the European Central Bank. Monti, exterminating angel of austerity. And don't forget Papademos of Greece, who's from the Boston Federal Reserve. So I saw an interesting cartoon coming through the Paris airport, coming back from Syria. You have a guy in a jail, right? He's in a jail cell. He's got a newspaper, and it says, "Goldman Sachs veterans take power in Europe." And he picks up the phone, and he says, "This is Harry Madoff. I'm volunteering to become prime minister of Portugal or Spain or Italy." Right? So Madoff, we may be getting to the point where Madoff will be rehabilitated and made head of the European Central Bank or the European Commission or whatever it is. It's basically a world gone mad. So it's time to assert sanity against this stuff. And that means denounce the slide into dictatorship by all means, right? Shock people to awareness. But what you then want them to do is get a mass movement against Wall Street. Yes, against finance capital, to shut down the zombie banks and to nationalize the Federal Reserve. That's it in a nutshell.
Now, they're playing a sophisticated game, though, and they'll try all sorts of dirty tricks. You, myself, Dr. Roberts, and others saw the telltale signs of espionage with the former head of the IMF, who they shot down. That's now admitted right. with Dominique Strauss-Kahn that that was a intelligence operation and was staged. They're talking about his comeback. Why did they go after him?
Well, the account that I have is that that week, the week that Dominique Strauss-Kahn was entrapped, I guess he was entrapped on a Sunday night, I think, his schedule that night was to fly back to Europe, and he was actually headed for Berlin. And the story goes that there was an attempt by the Europeans back in the springtime when this happened that Strauss-Kahn was going to go to Berlin and meet with Merkel. And they were going to try to set up the pilot project, sort of the embryonic form of a new world monetary system, which would be alternative to the dollar, maybe a euro-based reserve currency. And, of course, if you want to do that, the first thing you need is oil, so that they actually had an envoy who was scheduled to go from Berlin to Tripoli, Libya, to meet with Gaddafi to see if they could get him to be the initial oil backstop for that. In other words, would he lend his oil reserves and his African following to this kind of an operation? And for some reason, the Anglo-Americans decided, no, we don't want to wait for this. The Europeans might be doing something to save themselves from this attack, right? Because the crisis of the euro is artificial. It is economic warfare. It's a beggar my neighbor policy by the U.S. and the British to make sure that the second phase of the depression hits Europe, because it could just as easily have hit London, or which is actually much more bankrupt, right? Britain is a much, much poorer country than France. It's much more bankrupt.
And by the way, that's even admitted. That's even admitted in the British papers. And of course, they'll get to England and us here too. They just want to destroy that first. I mean, you know, the globalists do plan on further destroying us.
Yeah, but there's also the Frankenstein effect. In other words, what the schemers in the city of London and Wall Street, what they think they're going to get is not what they get, right? They thought that Hitler would attack Stalin, and that was all. And instead, Hitler turned out to be trickier than they thought. He turned out to be, indeed, a Frankenstein monster. So when they once you get into this game of having a depression and you're trying to shove that onto somebody else, then the boomerang effect is going to get you.
Well, I mean, what about poking China and Russia in the nose? That's reckless.
Well, we had, Medvedev was completely sold on the reset, right? He really believed that there was going to be a reset with Obama. Look at Obama. He's got such a nice smiling face. And we had that little
hamburger
button. We had that button. Yeah, we had hamburger diplomacy. We had Medvedev.
Yeah, but come on. Medvedev, isn't Medvedev a minion of Putin?
Yeah, but maybe not, because if you get the entire world on your side, even in a country like Russia, that gives you real power. So they were Goldman Sachs people whispering in Medvedev's ear, you know, we're going to make you great, you know, dump Putin, we'll make you the lord of half the world. And instead, right now, Medvedev is on his way out. I think what's likely to happen now is Putin is going to say, Medvedev, you failed. Your lousy campaign, your lousy policies have lost us 77 seats in the parliament. We're dumping you. We're bringing in somebody else.
Let's be honest, Webster. Medvedev was simply a placeholder for Putin and to create the illusion of people changing so Putin could still be in power. I mean, come on.
Just case in point, right? Libya. If Putin had been president, this Libya thing could never have happened. It was Medvedev who insisted. He actually said that Russia would join in the attack with, he said, peacekeeping forces. But that meant.
And we have seen a shift in policy because now Putin and others have said, you attack Syria, we're going to attack you.
Right. And they've got an aircraft carrier, a heavy cruiser with guided missiles. They've got nuclear submarines. Nobody knows how many Russian nuclear submarines there are in the Eastern Mediterranean. I don't want to find out. And you've got similar things going on, I'm sure, with Iran and elsewhere. So there is a change, and there was a substantive divergence. It was more than just.
What do you make of Pakistan and the Iran situation, Webster? And then I want to get into Pearl Harbor briefly.
It documents the insanity of the Anglo-Americans. With Pakistan, you have a country Pakistan is under a Chinese guarantee, in effect. The Chinese back in the springtime said China will consider an attack on Pakistan as an attack on China.
And now they've said that again.
It said it again. And Putin is now personally sponsoring China to become a full member of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. So there's a double guarantee for Pakistan. But the Anglo-Americans say, hey, we're the imperialists. We rule the world. We're crazy. We do what we want. We're pushing ahead. We're going to try to grab the Pakistani nuclear forces. So again, you've got this belt of territory, right? Because that's what's emerging. Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, where the U.S. is now leaving, right? We're having a Mayaguez moment like 1975 in Saigon. Plus, then after Iraq comes Iran and Pakistan. That's a huge piece of the Earth's surface, which is now pretty much rebelling against the U.S. and the British. And Hillary Clinton is bonkers. Susan Rice is bonkers. Obama, I don't know how bonkers he is. He's certainly mentally disturbed, but he's mainly out there courting adulation as he runs around, you know, from campaign event to campaign
he's
event.
He's an egomaniac, narcissist, moron.
Remember, the five people... U.S. is now run by five people. That's a secret committee. Committee of Public Safety is Panetta, it's Hillary Clinton, it's Eric Holder, police minister, it's Don Alon of the National Security Council, and General Petraeus. That's the principals committee. That's what runs the U.S. Not Obama is sort of a, you know, he's a sideshow with his campaign events and his, you know, he wants to cut the Social Security payroll tax. He wants to destroy Social Security to give himself a short-term boost. Despicable.
All right. Amazing information. We only got about 10 minutes left, and I meant to get to some calls, but we'll have to do it tomorrow on the subject of the 7th anniversary. I mean, we know the Honolulu Advertiser reported a week before they'd be attacked on the morning of December 7th. The Japanese submarines were attacked that morning off the coast. Still, they ordered the stand down, the purple code, the blue code broken. Again, I'm not saying the Imperial Japanese were good, but this is a great example.
No, they were not good. They were really bad. I think that's maybe the starting point, is that Japan, if you take the period between 1890 and 1950, Japan attacked more countries and bigger countries than anybody in the world. They did not have to be provoked to do anything. When they wanted to attack Manchuria, they provoked themselves with the Mukden incident. When they wanted to attack China...
No, very aggressive, very martial. My point is you're writing a book on Pearl Harbor itself, though. Yeah. What's your view?
So here it is. Well, you got to get the historical background.
Go ahead, then.
The background is what's missing. Let's just do it on three levels. First of all, let me premise. If you're interested in the book... progressivepress.com. Progressivepress.com, you can pre-order it. Unfortunately, it's going to be a couple of months late concerning the anniversary. So progressivepress.com, look under coming soon, and then you'll find the Pearl Harbor. There are three groups we got to look at. First is Kimmel, Short, and Block in Hawaii, right? The commanders on the scene. Why do they blow it? Then we got to go back to Washington. We got to look in the War Department and the Navy Department. And we got to look at the group around Stimson, Marshall, McCloy, Lovett, Bundy. Interesting names. And a guy called Richmond K. Turner at the Navy Department. And then on the codes, we got to look at Sir Winston Churchill, because he's the guy who can read the Japanese naval code, JN-25, which the U.S. largely cannot read, or he can read much better, and he is the one who fails. He refuses to warn Roosevelt and the U.S. that the Japanese are coming. But let's take it in order. First of all, the guys on the scene, right? Kimmel and Short. Kimmel for the Navy, Short for the Army, and actually Block is the naval district commander. They get a warning on November 27th. It says, consider this a war warning, carry out an appropriate defensive deployment. And they do what? Virtually nothing. Short actually makes it worse. He puts the planes on the runway wingtip to wingtip, and Kimmel says, well, we'll be ready for submarines. That's not what you were supposed to be ready for. You're supposed to be ready for carriers. And they knew this, right? They'd been drilling this since the 1920s. They'd known, and they'd even known what direction the Japanese fleet would have to come from if it wanted to preserve secrecy, not crossing the sea lane. So Kimmel, in particular, who's the most vocal defending himself, he blames everybody but himself. Kimmel, you had submarines, you had destroyers, you had light cruisers with airplanes on them. You had something called seaplane tenders, where you could have six or eight seaplanes operating off something that looked like a freighter. You could have sent all of that out and made a screen. You were told by the Navy Department to send out sampans, yachts, tugs. You were told to send Coast Guard cutters. You had dozens and dozens and dozens of ships. You also had PBY Catalinas. You had B-18 Bolo bombers. They were obsolete, but you could use them for pretty good reconnaissance. Why did Kimmel do nothing? Because it's clear he did nothing. He refused to do any of that. He said, I couldn't have a perfect search, therefore I had no search. And unfortunately, people in the Navy backed him up. I would say the verdict on these people is they're defeatists. They don't want to fight fascism. They don't want the war that's in front of them. They're thinking about some other war, some other time. If you look in American military history, these guys are like George McClellan. They want to train and train and train. And then somebody says, why don't you go and fight? Oh, no, I've got to train and train. And in particular, they remind me of the French generals of the year before, who had a very strong military establishment and were nevertheless rolled over by Hitler because their heart wasn't in it.
Well, that was Vichy infiltration. They were just waiting to have power handed to them. And, of course, you bring up the famous Civil War northern general who wouldn't fight. But, I mean, yeah, Webster, it's clear that your precious Roosevelt was involved in him. And,
and
he was talking to Churchill, and Churchill said he slept a wonderful sleep that night, knowing the U.S. would be brought into the war and all the rest of it.
You got to get into the fine-grained detail. Now, let's look. The problem is, obviously, the people in Pearl Harbor are bunglers. When I started with this, I said they're just garden-variety bunglers. But now I realize they're defeatists. They're people who agree with Lindbergh. And with the Chicago Tribune, and they say, "Let Hitler seize the world. We don't care."
So they're like Neville Chamberlains.
Exactly.
All right, stay there. Let's look at.
But that's only the first.
Let's
level.
Stay there. Now, Pearl Harbor, 70 years later, with Webster. I love Roosevelt tarpley. We'll be right back. I'm Alex Jones.
Waging war on corruption. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
All right, Austin Police Chief Art Acevedo has been out there sitting in his car, so we'll see if we can get him in here. Since he's guilty until proven innocent, we're going to have to strip search him like the DSA does. Old ladies, I'm just joking. We're going to get him in here. He's also known as Count Dracula in this area because of all his warrantless blood draws. When he gets in there, I got a constitution. I'm going to find out if I even pull it out. I'll be like, ah! And I'll be like, ha ha! Back, creature of the night! Back into your resting place! And he'll be like, it'll be like a cartoon. He'll run through the wall like a cutout of his body. Watch, when I get him in here, I'm going to go, what about this chief? Hold the constitution. He'll be like, ah! All right, Tarpley, I got to get you back up here in the near future. I'm going to have a nice interview with the police chief. He's a very charming, nice person in many respects. They say Beelzebub is as well. But anyways, he has a lot of courage to come in here and talk to me because he is a smart guy. Maybe he's right. Maybe the New World Order is good. But anyways, he's coming in here. Tarpley, you've got the floor. Okay, so you're getting into what really happened with Pearl Harbor. My whole issue is, you know about the five midget subs that were trying to attack that morning and still the stand down went forward? I think it's worse than just bungling here, Webster.
Yeah, but look, you're dealing with Kimmel and Short, who don't want to fight. They're not interested in fighting fascism. And you can compare Short, right, his lack of air defense, you can compare that to a guy who did want to fight fascism. General Claire Chennault of the Flying Tigers was able to defend, like, Rangoon, Burma, the same month as Pearl Harbor, with very few aircraft, 10, 20, 30 Flying Tigers. He was able to inflict very serious losses on Japanese attackers. And he had been doing that even for the Chinese. He organized the air defense of Shanghai, China in 1937, 1938, and got the same kind of results. So you could have defended the island, except you needed to have the Chennault mentality, which was, we want to fight fascism, and we trust the people. We're willing to trust the average Chinese.
Yeah, but the Flying Tigers were sent there covertly to fight the Japanese.
Yeah, but even before the Flying Tigers, there's Chenault as an individual, is an advisor to Chiang Kai-shek, and he organizes the air defense of Chinese cities. Very interesting thing.
But no, now, I'm not saying that was a bad thing. I think the Japanese were out of control. It's just, let's be honest, they let them attack the ships to get us into the war. Yeah, and you're acting like Roosevelt was floating around playing harps up on some cloud.
Wait a minute. It's not Roosevelt. This is the fraud. The idea that Roosevelt is a conspiracy. Roosevelt is the target of the conspiracy. And here's the conspiracy. The people in Washington, if you see that your guys in Hawaii are bungling and they don't get it, you got to get on the horn and tell them, hey, bozos, snap to. Get yourself going, right? We're talking about a war warning here, and you're thinking about sabotage or submarines. Who blocks that? Admiral Richmond K. Turner in the Navy Department. And he's really the dominant.
Well, maybe you're right. Maybe it was bungling because they did stop all five of the Japanese subs. You go on total alert when Japanese subs are invading the island.
Except there's no alert. In other words, they would have had 1 or 2 hours of warning, except there's no alert. And they have radar warning, and there's no alert.
Now, that's a stand-down, Webster. It's not bungling.
It's a stand-down, yeah, by who? By the commanders who are there. And they're bunglers because they're essentially soft on fascism. They don't.
How
want
do you
war.
Bungle now, when submarines an hour and a half before are in battles with anti-submarine ships?
They refuse to call an alert, right? Short.
You got submarines attacking. You don't call an alert. That's not bungling, Webster.
That's what they did. That's
not bungling, Webster. You got five submarines attacking an hour and a half before, and they don't.
And they don't do an alert. You've got radar coming in, and the guy says, don't worry about it.
We're going to have to debate this. We're going to have to debate this next week. I hear you, Webster. I appreciate you joining us. There he is, Arde Saveda, Austin Police Chief. And I have here the holy water and the cross. We're going to see if it touches his skin, the Constitution. I'm told that it will literally burn through his body. Straight ahead. Stay with us.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Okay, folks, we're going to get Arde Saveda in here, the Austin Police Chief, here in just a moment. And go over a lot of different issues with him. I really appreciate his community outreach program. Like, let's just bring him on in right now. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen. He is Darth Vader is entering the building. Hey, good to see you, Chief. He just blew the door off like when Darth Vader captures Princess Leia. Yeah. And the door goes. Stormtroopers came running through.
Yeah.
Now listen, you know what this is right here?
Citizens rule book.
It's got a constitution in it.
All right, can I have it?
Bill of Rights. You can.
Is it my gift?
Hold on.
I'll read it.
I thought you'd like go.
No, I'm all about the Constitution.
Did you know your nickname in Austin now? The Vampire.
I know, the Vampire Cop. That's from your friend John Bush gave me that, didn't he? Or did you do that?
I don't know. It's just that you have the blood draws at the checkpoints. Here.
Don't have checkpoints.
Here you go.
Thank you. It's a nice book.
That's subversive material right there. Chief, I hope that's fluoride-free water you're drinking.
It is. It is fluoride.
Only the Ozarka for kids is fluoride.
Oh, this doesn't have fluoride.
No, I know. It's good, but the Ozarka brand for kids does.
How you been doing? I haven't seen you in a couple of years.
Yeah, it's good to have you here.
I know. Last time I saw you were outside my window calling me a communist. That really hurt my feelings.
Really?
Yes. I don't like communists. That's why I'm in the United States.
I know, but isn't a police state? I mean, isn't that kind of what the communists do?
But there is no judge or jury, man. You just you disappear.
Oh, have you heard about the new National Defense Authorization Act where the military is going to be on the streets?
That's news to me. Here we go.
No, I'm serious. We'll print it off for you. You didn't hear about the bill where they want to use the military?
Not yet.
Have you heard about the TSA wanting to run checkpoints on the highways and starting it?
No, I haven't heard that yet.
What is your view of that?
Well, I mean, I have to get more information, but I think that if somebody's going to do that, that's what we have the local police for. There's a specific need. I don't think we need TSA to do it, but who knows? I don't know.
Isn't that a violation of the 10th Amendment to have? I mean, that's outside the Fed's jurisdiction.
Well, depends what the checkpoints are for, but the bottom line is I'd have to get more information. But
checkpoints aren't good, though. Aren't those unconstitutional?
Depends on what checkpoints you're talking about. I mean, DWI checkpoints have been held constitutional by the U.S. Supreme Court. Driver's license checkpoints have been held constitutional. But there are some parameters that you have to follow in most states.
What, does it stop everybody?
No, it is. You have to advertise them. For example, DWI checkpoints. I mean, DWI checkpoints, if you really think about them, they're actually, if you really think about them, if they're done right, they're really voluntary.
Why do you have to advertise them?
That's some of the requirements in most states to have them.
So if Germany would have advertised checkpoints, it would have been good then?
No. The checkpoints they had were not, well, they're looking for specific people based on their race, just to, in many cases, and religion.
It's just going to be if you love freedom and are a patriot. Because you get those federal training manuals where it says libertarians, conservatives, returning veterans are the number one terror threat.
I have not seen it.
You have to.
I have not, Jones. And your listeners, you know, they'll end up thinking I have. I have not seen them. But, you know, I actually, what's really interesting, people don't realize, I actually listen to you. My wife, it drives her crazy. She says, you're depressing.
Your family left Cuba because you don't like communism.
Absolutely.
So it was mainly a joke when I was out bullhorning you.
I know, but
because I thought I could see you through the windows. I thought that was you up there. So I was like,
no, I wasn't there that day. But
you just watched the videos. Later.
I watched the video. Yeah, yeah.
Big brother.
You're big brother. You're on the internet. You're everywhere. You're the true big brother. I'm just Art Acevedo, the one chief trying to keep people safe.
No, I know. I know. Well, I mean, you have been doing overall a pretty good job.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
I mean, you've been actually going after people when they do, when, you know, cops that do bad things. That's good.
Well, you have to. I think that a democracy, you have to police within the realm of the Constitution. You have to. And what's interesting is some of the guys that, I remember having a meeting with some guys, and I won't say their names, I don't want to embarrass them, but they came in, they said they didn't believe in the Constitution. Well, unfortunately, that's the book we follow, and so...
Really, who came in and said they didn't believe in it?
I don't want to say it.
Austin police or the feds?
No, it was people that don't trust the government, a group that started the conversation with myself and David Carter. I don't know if you've met David, our chief of staff, that they didn't believe in the Constitution. And my response to them was, well, then I guess our meeting will be very short because we try to do everything consistent with the Constitution.
Well, stay there, police chief. Art Acevedo is our guest. Thanks for coming in.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Well, Austin Police Chief Art Acevedo is really nice to come in studio with us. He's been a really busy guy, and it's part of his outreach with the population. That's basically, of course, the New World Order's enemy. But it's good for their psyops to come in and act friendly with us. And so I'm just teasing. I know you're a nice guy.
Yeah,
That's why I got him the tar and feather kit. This is just for Police Chief Art Acevedo. All right, I'm going to stop roasting him in a minute. Here we go. Folks actually mailed this to me, and they actually sell these on the internet. Tar and feather kit, that's what they did to the British bureaucrats that violated people's rights and liberties. And I've been wondering what to do with it, and I saw it there on the table today when Art Acevedo was coming in, so I thought, and it's got real tar and feathers, and say next Halloween you can go out on 6th Street as part of community outreach and maybe
yeah,
tar and feather.
Excellent. Yeah, we'll hold on to that. We'll put it right here. That looks good.
And then lastly, I've got you some raw milk.
I love milk.
Raw milk from San Antonio right here. Now, transporting this across state lines is illegal. So you're not leaving Austin for the next few
what's
days.
What's the date today?
You're not about
to... No, that's enough. What's the date today?
We got it a couple days ago. It stays good for like weeks.
It's December 6th. Does that mean that's the day it was... Is that the expiration date?
No, that's when it came out of the cow.
All right. I love milk. Are you setting me up?
No. Oh, God forbid it be bad and get sick and it's a setup. No. I noticed the glass I tried to give him, he didn't take. He gave that to me.
That's very good. I love milk.
Do you think it's good the feds are raiding people that are producing this all over the country?
I have no idea. I it's milk to me, man. I mean,
this is pretty extreme. I think we should have checkpoints to stop people drinking this. Wants to send you home with it? It's good. Give it to the missus.
It's not good for the waistline.
I bet your son would like it.
It's not good for the waistline.
Well, your son is a couple years old. He can have this.
Yeah, leave it right there. We'll talk about it later.
No, we're going to give you the milk. All right, I'm going to stop it.
That's really good.
Look, I'm trying to be witty, and you know I'm not witty.
You can
go ahead. You're mad at me for the communist comment. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I'm not mad. It's just like I just know. I think you know we may not agree on everything, but I think you know that I may be misguided in your eyes, but you know my heart's in the right place. And what I'm trying to do is keep people safe, which is what our officers are trying to do. And just trying to keep Austin the cool, livable city it is. It's a great place to live and work. And I don't want it to become another major American city where people are getting gunned down left and right and, you know, some things. I think you got really upset about that gun show thing. Where I think that kind of spun out of control. We really didn't shut anything down. The owner himself decided to shut that down. It was not the police department. That's what you were upset
about. Well, we talked to the folks that were at the meetings, though. It wasn't the Austin Police Department. The feds basically told them and intimidated them into it.
But you know what? I came from a state that's really very strict on gun ownership laws and concealed carry and stuff. That's California. To one that's a little bit much more progressive, probably one of the most progressive in the country. And I am a completely a convert. You know, the thought of people driving around with guns in their cars made me very nervous when I first got here. But I really believe that responsible gun ownership, which is what Texas has demonstrated by, you know, making sure that people, number one, don't have psychological issues, true psychological issues, or that they're not involved in criminal enterprises, that absent that, that law-abiding Americans should be able to bear arms and buy weapons. And the problem that I see, and I think that people that support the right to bear arms needs to be careful of, is when you have straw purchasers that show up at these gun shows, they buy a bunch of guns, and then they go out and they sell them to criminals, to crooks, to people that are going to do the drive-by shooting.
But as long as I have my guns to defend myself,
right.
I mean, look at Chicago, New York, highest crime rates because only the criminals have the guns.
Right.
You're never going to stop the criminals from having guns. I mean, I would never say take guns from police. I'm always more guns for police. People get mad about police getting semi-automatic and automatic weapons. I say good. I mean, my whole issue is more guns, less crime. But, I mean, let's look at Fast and Furious. A couple of years ago with the gun show debacle, I was pointing out that was an ATF setup. And now we know that those were. And the ATF has been shipping guns into Mexico to then blame the Second Amendment. What's your view of Fast and Furious?
Well, I think that you got to be very careful that when you put something in the hands of the wrong people or try to introduce a firearm that doesn't end up in the wrong hands. And I think that common sense would dictate that if we are shipping weapons to Mexico that end up in the narco traffickers' hands that are now executing police officers and innocent people and all kinds of people in Mexico, that they're on the verge of a civil war down there. They don't really get it together. I don't think that's was smart.
Well, the feds got caught lying to Congress. They weren't just allowing some to be sold. They were shipping them in.
Yeah.
And then did you hear about Sinaloa? A national security got declared on it in Chicago. Sinaloa was allowed to ship drugs in for 5 years. And when the attorney general brought that up and said, well, you know, Bush did this too, that's when they finally dropped the whole case. Because Bush was involved as well. I mean, you know about Iran-Contra and all that.
Yeah, of course.
You're out in California.
I lived, you know, that's not history for us. That was living history for us.
Well, what about drug decriminalization?
You know, I have seen over the years what drugs does to people. It ruins a lot of lives, especially the addictive drugs. And
well, no, you're the water's in the shot.
We can't put a product in the shot?
No, it looks better if it's all is Lord Art Acevedo.
Okay, all right, Lord
I Vader. Didn't mean to. Here, you can have the water.
No, it's good.
You can have the milk, too. Here.
But the thing is.
Here, brought to you by. I'm sorry, go ahead.
He is crazy as ever. I love the man. Now you made me forget what we're talking about.
We're talking about Fast and Furious.
No, we were talking about something else.
Decriminalization of drugs.
Look, I am a proponent that the answer is not to because even in some European countries where they've decriminalized drugs, they're starting to take a second look at it because of the social impact it has on people's lives when people get addicted to some of the drugs. I am a proponent of we need to fight the war at the source, which means where they're being produced. And that's a national security issue that goes beyond the purview of the Austin Police Department. But I don't think the answer is to decriminalize drugs. Marijuana, I'm not that excited about. You know, I'm not. I don't get too excited about marijuana.
But come on, I can pull the numbers up. You're saying Europe's taking a second look at it. They've got all sorts of numbers where you decriminalize and actually drug use goes down.
Well, if you look at Vancouver, which is a city that has a very permissive attitude towards drug use, they've got a tremendous problem there.
Well, yeah, when it's pockets, all the druggies move there.
Yeah, and
that's so, like Amsterdam. Well, listen, I don't
Amsterdam
like
Amsterdam is another area where they have problems.
Yeah, but I don't use illegal drugs. I've tried some of them,
yeah,
and always felt like I was kicked in the head by a mule. And I'm like, people pay for this. Yeah. I mean, I like coffee and stuff like that, but in the final equation, look what the drug war is doing to Mexico. Their own government's talking about decriminalizing.
To me, and again, it's not decriminalization. I think it's taking the war to the source, and that's the answer.
If the source is the U.S. government?
Well, if that were the case, then we need to do something about that as well.
Well, have you seen them admit that our troops have to grow the opium in Afghanistan?
I have not seen that.
You know what? You're a smart guy. It's convenient. You're like Sergeant Saltz.
Stop. You've seen nothing. Listen. I work 7 days a week, and my primary function is the city of Austin.
No, I know.
I don't have that much downtime, and I've got plenty of reading to do, and the only show I really watch on TV is The Walking Dead on AMC. I absolutely
Isn't that a zombie, or is that a vampire movie?
No, it's a zombie show.
I thought you'd like a vampire movie.
No. Actually, I saw one the other day on my iPhone that was actually pretty good. I forgot what it was called.
Listen, I'm not just in here trying to grill you over this stuff, but I promise you, we can put it on screen.
Yeah.
Detention camp order follows preparation for civil unrest, and then here's the emails, here's the Halliburton operation. I have the Wall Street Journal 6 years ago where they first got the contract to build the camps. Now they're preparing to man the camps, and it talks about security, checkpoints, barbed wire, and barricades, and they have this Emergency Centers Establishment Act that basically says political dissidents will go in these.
Yeah.
Chief, are the feds out of their jurisdiction if they start arresting political dissidents?
Well, I think if you look at the First Amendment, that we have the right to free speech, the right to associate with whatever beliefs we have, as long as we don't start talking and taking action to hurt other people or taking arms, I think that'd be a slippery slope.
No kidding. But
can I have this?
Absolutely. Yeah, but in fact, guys, will you print him articles about the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, the end of posse comitatus? They say the troops can operate anywhere in the U.S. and arrest citizens and never give you a trial.
You know, I think that if you talk to military leadership in this country, they would not feel a lot of their senior leaders would not feel comfortable being involved in police actions within the confines of the continental United States.
Well, I agree with you. They actually have said they don't like it, and top JAG officers have come out, but they follow orders.
Yeah, but we'll see. I think that would be unprecedented.
I mean, you lived in Cuba when you were little. There, Fidel uses the military.
Well, Fidel uses everybody. I mean, you talk about each block has, and this is what American media drives me crazy. They would have, the May Day celebration in Havana. 2 million Cubans showed up. Dan Rather would do this all the time, and shows how popular this guy was. No, what he failed to tell the American people is that on every block, there was a block captain for the defense of the revolution, and that block captain took notes to see who didn't go to the celebration, May Day celebration, whoever didn't go. If your kid was in medical school, the next day they'd find themselves working the sugarcane fields. And so that's how they got people to go to those things, not because they loved the revolution, like some of these people that try to fantasize and romanticize communism. You know, if it was so great, so many thousands of Cubans wouldn't die trying to cross the strait every year trying to get out of that place.
Well, look what Chavez has done now. He's really wrecked Venezuela.
That's sad. It's sad.
And he uses the military domestically.
Yes, he does. And so I think they would, people can plan for whatever they want, but the American people will have the final say when it's all said and done.
We're going to skip this network break here and continue. We have the police chief here. You're with us a whole hour, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm sure.
You are very gracious to do that.
Well, hey.
And before you leave, I know you have a tight schedule. Go see our new TV studio on the other side.
Oh, do you really?
It'll be good for your intelligence files as well. Yeah. Hey, I have had the FBI here.
And
the Secret Service, yes.
To talk to you or on the show?
To talk to me. And they wanted to know about the Obama posters out there on the wall. They thought that was like they'd found some crazy person's lair. And I explained it was, no, they came and were asking about the Obama deception.
Yeah.
My film. And I said, well, don't you know about it? And I'm serious. This happened.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
See, I wish the feds were nice and friendly like you.
Well, I think that you build trust by talking to people and having that's your cup and having a dialogue. You know, it's like our intelligence center. Everybody was sure that we created the Austin Regional Intelligence Center that the skeptics thought that we were, it's there to spy on, you know, law abiding Americans. And what's really interesting is if you haven't been there, you should come and visit. You're welcome to see it. That was nothing more than trying to leverage technology to solve crime. And I'm glad to say that almost 2 years into it, we're doing it right here in Austin.
But the threat fusion centers all over the country are basically federally funded. And let me ask you this question. How many face scanning and license plate reading cameras are here in Austin? How many of the gunshot detectors that never catch anybody firing a firearm that, by the way, are really microphones listening to people? I mean, are you aware that Homeland Security's putting microphones up hidden in light poles all over the country?
No, but Live Shot, because we are a safe city, I'm glad to say that as much as people have tried to sell those to us, we have not bought them. I don't see a need for them. This is not a very violent city. That's a safe city, thank God.
But you know they're not really gunshot detectors, they're microphones to listen to people.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that they could be multi-use if they wanted to, but the bottom line is we haven't bought them here. License plate readers, you might not like it, but I like LPRs because it's a good technology to catch. If you look at Britain, what happens is if you go into small towns, they've been fighting thanks to the troubles in Northern Ireland over the years. They've been fighting terrorism for many years. They've had a lot of people die over the years with explosions and stuff. But if you go into a British town, there's license plate readers at the entrance to most of those smaller towns. And if the vehicle's wanted for a crime or it's stolen, within minutes the police can actually apprehend that person because of that technology. So, I mean, technology isn't technology in of itself is not evil. It's what you use it for.
How many cars do you have with it?
LPRs, I think we have 4, but don't quote me on that. It could be less. It could be a couple.
Because I see the news with the cops. They're like, that guy's wanted. That's a car robbery. That's a stolen car. I'm like, why aren't you stopping each one? Why are you driving past them?
Well, you didn't see that here. If it alerts, we're going to arrest the person. But LP, to me, data, to me, technology is a force multiplier. It gives us an ability to fight crime, disrupt crime, solve crime, in a more efficient manner.
Let me ask you this way. What would Hitler have done with face scanning systems and license plate readers?
Exactly. But it's not the technology that's evil.
Could your family have escaped Cuba or other families if Fidel Castro had that then?
I mean, they have fences. They have everything. And people.
The point is the courts and let the violent criminals and bad ones go over and over again. We know it's like 5% of the population that's causing almost all the crime. They just let them go. We don't need all this high tech stuff because it always gets turned around on the population.
But, well, you know what? That's why I think that I always say this. We need to be, you need to trust but verify. That's one of those Reagan mantras, trust but verify. That's what I think that for us, like in our intelligence center, we have a really good privacy policy. We have a privacy policy committee that's well represented, including advocates. I actually invited John Bush of the Texans for Accountable Government, and I know you guys are buddies, to be on it. He declined. I invited the ACLU to be on it. They declined. But it's because we want to show them that we want, you know, to me, having that level of accountability and transparency helps me build trust, one, and two, it helps us create an environment where the misuse of the data or some rogue officer or something goes off sideways. I want to have those checks and balances to make sure we're doing things right.
What about 10 years ago? You weren't here then. What, you've been police chief how many years?
It'll be 5 in July. Yeah. I looked at a picture the other day. I have age in those 5 years, buddy. This place has killed me.
Well, responsibility does age you.
Yeah.
You haven't aged that much, but you've aged a little bit.
Oh, I'm going to show you a picture when we're done.
You had more of the Bob Big Boy haircut and stuff before.
Well, I'm going to grow it out. Again, I
think it's good.
Like
yeah, whatever.
It's kind of long.
You got more hair than I do. It's good. No, but going back here.
10 years ago.
10 years ago, and I have a clip of it in my film, Road to Tyranny. It showed Austin police in the elementary schools going, you can get up to $200 for reporting crime. Here's your little credit card, your little card that you get prizes for. And then I went and got a card, talked to parents, and it even had stuff like, look in your parents' medicine cabinets. That sounds like Fidel Castro to me.
We did that?
Yeah. Is that program still going?
No. I wouldn't be a proponent to do that.
Or maybe that's the AISD police. Is that their own police department?
I like that better. They have their own.
No, but I don't. I mean, I've got to pull the video up
for it. I don't think. Have we ever had that program? I don't think so. We have. I mean, we have the different programs that if people, the WeTip type programs where if you
sure.
witnessed a crime, certain crimes, you'll get a reward for.
Yeah, but how do you vet that? Because a lot of times people who will do it because they don't like somebody.
Well, you can't just convict somebody based on one anonymous tip. You've got to look for evidence.
Yeah, but we see the SWAT team cases where the retired insurance guy gets killed because, you know, the informant says, oh, there's drugs in there.
Yeah, but that wasn't here.
No, I know.
So we have protocol we follow here to make sure that we don't hit the wrong houses, to make sure that we, you don't just trust blindly, that you have to build a case. You know, you just, a tip is but one piece. It's kind of like everybody's worried about this, see something suspicious, say something. Well, if you see a bag sitting in a busy downtown street, just sitting there, that's suspicious. You should say something. We don't know what's in that bag.
But terrorism, you got a better chance of dying from a honeybee sting. I've been at the airport now and left my bag to go over and get napkins or something 20 feet away and watch people starting to freak out. I mean, it's like people are just completely scared of everything.
Well, I don't know if they're completely scared, but I think
these dudes see something ads, you know, it like shows a guy put his bag down. The woman's like, hey, you, and then they got bomb teams out and robots.
But the reality is there are people who would like to do us harm. And the bottom line is I think that as long as we collectively as Americans are all responsible for the safety and security of our nation. And that means that the reason Austin, despite the fact that we have fewer police officers than most cities our size per capita, you know, we have 2,000, two officers per every 1,000 residents. The national average for big cities, which is 500,000 or more people, is 2.7 per 1,000. The national average nationwide, when you consider all 18 to 19,000 police departments, is 2.4 per resident. Per 1,000 residents. We're at 2 per 1,000 is because we have a highly educated community, an engaged community, and a community that stands up for its neighbors. And when they see something, you know, they see somebody breaking in, they call. When they see
No, I know, but I don't know if we need Janet Napolitano to tell us if we see something, say something. If I see something, I do say something. Absolutely. I remember when I lived over in South Austin, this gas station went from being a nice gas station to being horrible.
Yeah.
And then I noticed there was no food on the shelves or anything being sold, and they were running whores out the front door. Yeah. And I pulled up to a cop and said, hey, that's obviously a whorehouse right there. I don't know whatever happened because I ended up moving, but you know, that was right over there off William Cannon.
Yeah, hey, the bottom line is that, you know, this community is our eyes and ears, and you know, when you worry about people trying to, the vendetta, I saw the V for Vendetta out there on one of your screens. When it's a personal vendetta, we're not going to take action. A SWAT team's not going to go hit a house based on one guy saying, "Hey, I think this is going on." And if somebody says something, makes it up, and we demonstrate they made it up, that's a false police report, or that's making a false statement, and that can lead to some consequences for that person. So there are some checks and balances, and it's something we take very seriously.
So, I mean, I gave you the article here. This is out of the Huffington Post, but I give it to InfoWars, you name it. Senate votes to let military detain Americans indefinitely. White House threatens veto. And by the way, that did pass. The White House says they're going to veto it because they can already do it through the executive, they say. They don't need Congress.
Yeah, I think that is just talking about American residents or citizens that become enemy combatants overseas or something.
Yeah, but no, they've expanded it to domestically and just basically anybody they want.
Well, there are three different branches of government, right? Executive, legislative, and executive, and I think that
judicial, yeah,
and judicial, and so I think the judiciary might have a different view, and we'll see what they say.
But I mean, as a police chief, does that creep you out?
To just indefinitely hold somebody without evidence and without a hearing?
Yeah.
An American citizen in our country?
Yes.
I would have some concern with that, yes.
You'd have some concern. Well, I'm glad. Well, you would have some. I'm pretty darn...
You don't ever want to say 100% because until I see what's going on and actually see it in
All right. All right, stay there. We got to go to break. We're going to come right back because...
There's a woman on my block. there as the night grows still. She'll say, who gonna take away his license to kill? Now they take him and they teach him.
Okay, Police Chief Art Acevedo is here with us. Very nice guy. And he is engaging with the public. And he's saying that he doesn't want American citizens to be indefinitely detained. KBR, and I mentioned this earlier, Kellogg Brown and Root of Halliburton, and I have the links to the Wall Street Journal here, built camps in 2006 for civil emergency. Links to all of it. And then now they are putting out the secret bids. We were sent the information. We have copies of it all. To prepare within 72 hours notice whenever they pull the trigger. People are paid to be on notice to man the camps. Mm-hmm. And it's got barbed wire. It's got barricades. It's got it all right there.
Mm-hmm.
You're as bad as a lot of people are on those phones. Is that important? Is the, must be, the bat phone.
Yeah, that's funny. I'll tell you about it later.
What is it?
I get, do you really want to say it? Somebody says, I think your appearance on Alex Jones is improving his ratings as it got me to tune in.
You were saying some of your buddies from Los Angeles listen, or San Diego.
John Metters is a dear friend that I worked with for a long time. He was a sergeant in the CHP that retired a couple years ago. And the first time I appeared with you, within the next day, I got a message from him, and he was really happy to see me interacting with you. And like, well, he knows me anyway, so he knows where my heart's at.
Well, you know, we give the number out for police to call in. They call in and around the country and confirm what we're saying about the feds and checkpoints and things. I mean, there are now TSA checkpoints with the Army going on in at least a dozen states. Would you like to drive up to an Army checkpoint in the middle of Tennessee?
Probably not. When I go to Mexico and visit, it makes me very nervous when I see soldiers. I mean, this is a peaceful nation, and I just don't see the need.
Exactly. In fact, about 3 years ago, I took my family down to southern Mexico to see some of the pyramids.
Yeah.
And twice, the nice buses, tour buses we were on, got stopped, and the Army shook down the drivers.
Yeah, that's I think we've got plenty of professional law enforcement officers that I don't see anything on the horizon that we can't handle.
Well, then why do you think the feds are moving for this?
I don't know. You'd have to ask them that question. I'm not a Fed.
Well, I know. The feds have been taken over by those big mega banks. They're going to implode the country.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, what's funny is that this Occupy Austin movement, you know, they're screaming at us. And I'm like, do you realize we're the hired help? We're no different than you are. I mean, our cops, if you look at what's going on to public employee pensions, they're trying to take those away on a national level. And I just really think that it's a shame.
And that's not why we're in debt. That's not the big issue. No, it's the derivatives.
Some of my buddies work in a police department in another state, and I won't say which one it is. But they're trying. What's happened is that a lot of money was taken from the employee pension system. So the local government can build all these other things that these other things they wanted to do. So they underfunded it, right? And then they turn around and they blame the employees who they pay into the system. They come to work every day. No,
Portugal is now taking people's private pension funds.
Yeah.
So all these mainline conservatives, they're like, take all the pension funds, the public ones, wait till they have their private ones taken.
Well, what people don't get is that, you look and you attack public employee pensions when the economy's tanking, because there's a lot of angry Americans out there, and rightfully so.
That's less money in the economy.
Right. And it's easy to find people to turn into villains, but it's all... I think we've got to be real careful, because at the end of the day, we're all the hired help.
Well, we can debate pensions and all this all day, but if you have 1.5 quadrillion in fake derivatives these banks made, and you know, selling mortgages 100 times and all this, then that's the black hole that can't be paid back. And the media keeps making it like it's pensions and things that are causing it. They're a very small piece of it.
That's I remember when they were making loans, 125%. Loan to value. You don't have to even show us what your income. You don't have to prove income. Come on down. They made loans that they knew damn well they weren't supposed to make. They knew that loans that someday the piper's going to come on piping and nobody's going to be able to pay. And at the end of the day, we've all been held holding the bag. So, you know, it's a disgrace. We like to make fun of Mexico and other countries, but we're just a little bit more sophisticated here. That's all.
Well, exactly. And talking to the mortgage experts, that was only one level of the fraud. Once they had that mortgage, they would then leverage that out in some cases 100 times.
Sell it and resell it, and everybody's making money. Everybody's getting commissions. Everybody's lining their pockets. And at the end of the day, the American taxpayer got held holding the bag, and there's been very little accountability. If I apply for a loan and I put false information on there, I've committed fraud. I go to jail. Or I've committed perjury, depending on how the wording is on the loan app. And my humble opinion is, if I give out a loan knowing darn well that you aren't really qualified for that loan, knowing that that loan is going to eventually end up in default, I don't see how that's not fraud. And, you know, I can see why people are angry. I'm one of them. And so that's why I don't understand why people try to villainize police officers when, you know, we're all the hired help. We're all trying to hear how to feed our families, and we're all trying to make an honest living.
No, I understand all that. People talk about police officers all day. They talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly, because in history, when things collapse, the police are the ones that are going to be asked to go out and do, and the leadership of the government are a bunch of crooks. I can show you 10 clips of them admitting they grow the opium in Afghanistan. Why are they doing that? Because Pat Tillman and others were going to blow the whistle, so they murdered him. And I said it was a murder at the time. It's come out, it's a murder. Private Lynch, she didn't save all those people. And when they started speaking out, they murdered her people on her team. And then she had to come out. What I'm saying is, criminals run the highest levels of government. And they've got all these well-meaning people that work for them lower down in the system. And they have signed us on to $1,500 trillion globally. The American people and European people to the bank's debts. And I'm saying we've got to write those off because they're impossible to pay. They're going to feed everything into that. No amount of writing tickets, no amount of revenue generation, no amount of new franchise taxes that Rick Perry passed that I got to pay. No amount of this stuff will ever turn it around. Look, Bernie Madoff created the NASDAQ. Bernie Madoff is a crook. And he pointed out from prison in the New York Magazine article. He said, I did what everybody else did. You know what? It's true. At his level, he's nothing. Right. MF Global, former New Jersey governor, former head of Goldman Sachs, he knowingly took 50,000 plus private brokerage accounts that are sequestered. The word is segregated. Federal law, you can't take them. He just took them a month and a half ago and didn't get in trouble. I mean, do you feel safe having a government like that?
I would just say that I think there's room for improvement in government at all levels, including state, local, county. Just like there's room for improvement in my police department. You know, we're not perfect. And every day I always tell my people we need to strive to do better. And I think that it's doing better starts with recognition that things aren't perfect. They're not perfect anywhere. And that we should seize each day as an opportunity to do a little better. And that's what we try to do at the Austin Police Department.
Yeah. Well, where do you see things going then under federalization? What's your view of the 10th Amendment?
I really believe strongly in states' rights. You know, one of the things that I talked about when we had this so-called sanctuary city debate at the state legislature last year, is that I found it was kind of disingenuous for a state legislature that screams and yells at Washington about state rights on a regular basis. They then turn around and try to dictate to the cities, local municipalities that understand what the needs are in that local community, what the priorities are for that local community, then turn around and say that we can't manage our own resources as a police department or as a city. We can't set our own priorities. I really believe that state rights are important, and it's kind of interesting when I look at some of the legislative policies that are passed around the country. By legislatures that and legislative bodies that always speak about state rights, scream and yell at Washington about state rights, and then turn around and do the cities and counties the same thing that they accuse the federal government of doing to them.
Well, sure. I mean, you see the same type of corruption everywhere. It's just that when it gets really monolithic and powerful, it can be expressed in even bigger ways. That's what's so dangerous about the federal government. But look, I mean, certainly you read the different ADL, Southern Poverty Law Center, reports. In fact, I think I'm from memory, you've gone and spoken at the ADL, haven't you? And gotten awards and stuff. I know most police chiefs do. My issue is, you know, the ADL even came out and attacked Glenn Beck. The Southern Poverty Law Center, you had to hear a few years ago where they listed returning veterans as the number one terror threat.
I don't remember seeing that.
In that Homeland Security report.
From who?
They contributed to it, but it was a federal report. We can put it on screen. Just type in veterans number one terror threat, Infowars.com, or type in AP, whatever. The point is, just hypothetically, let's say it's true, which it is, but I know you want to see it in front of you, which is good. Trust but verify. What do you think of the government? Okay, have you heard about the different Explorer Scout programs where they train the 14-year-olds in every drill to take on disgruntled veterans and kill them?
I can tell you that I have an Explorer, that I started the Explorer Scouts here when I got here in 2007 because we have a tremendous problem with high school dropout and teenage pregnancy and everything else in the state and the city. And we don't teach our Explorers how to kill anybody. We teach them about respect, right. Teach them about the law.
That's good, Chief. Let's pull up New York Times for him right now. New York Times, it has a whole photo gallery of Explorer Scouts training to take on, quote, disgruntled Iraq war veterans and kill them. We're going to pull it up and show it to you.
Which screen? This one over here?
This wasn't preset. I'm just going along. They have to pull it up.
Oh, okay.
It'll take a second.
We have scouts here, but I think that with so many young people, that men and women that have been in combat now for, what is it?
Scouts trained to fight terrorists and more. First line of the article, they take on a disgruntled Iraq war veteran and kill him.
What kind of scouts? What kind of scouts are those? That's New York. That's in Imperial, California.
Yeah, it's all over the country.
Well, I'd like to see that. We don't do that here.
I'm not kidding. I mean, I'm just saying, if you want to know why I'm concerned, I've been to urban warfare drills and witnessed Marines training to take on American gun owners.
But is that urban warfare drill designed by the Marine Corps to fight here, or is it to fight in Iraq?
No. The role players are Americans.
Oh, I haven't seen
that. They say, where are you from? I'm from San Francisco. Where'd you get the weapon? And then the PR guy's like, you're not supposed to be here, Jones, because I would, you know, get into, like, the training area, and then they would suddenly not want me to see it. I've got all this on tape.
I got to see that. Do you have an extra copy I'd like to see?
I'm going to give it all to you. Here.
Okay, good.
Here's Police State 4, The Rise of FEMA.
Okay.
It's all yours. That's the latest.
I'll write you a review.
Well, some of these are really old. I'm going to give you all of my films.
No, I've seen some of them. Believe it or not, I've actually seen
In the intelligence ones. Unit, you guys are in there?
We are?
I mean, do you have me up on the big screen? You go, this is the main enemy.
No.
And then you... No, I know I'm not that important.
You're an Austinite. We like you.
I'm just a minor enemy.
Like I said, I actually listen to you and read your stuff.
I know. You're very, very nice. Hey, you actually come in here and talk to me.
Yeah, three times now.
Used to, a couple of police chiefs ago. Who was the one who looked like he was a corpse? I forgot. He was bald. I went over there to some open house thing where they had the tanks and the armored vehicles and everything. And I just tried to ask him a question. And all these other cops bumped into me. Get back. So, I mean, you are nice.
I'm pretty approachable. My staff thinks I'm too approachable. But you know what? At the end of the day, I work for the people. You know, I mean, I may be an employee of the city, but I work for the people. And my bosses have heard me say this. This community has heard me say this. I'd rather lose my job than not do my job. And
well, I have to say this. You're probably the most popular police chief we've ever had.
Oh, thanks.
Since I've lived here 20 years.
Yeah, well.
Talking about these guys on your staff, they don't like you coming to this show?
No, actually, they like me coming here. And crazy, the Anthony Hippolito there is one of your fans. He wanted to come by and say hi and meet you.
Uh-oh, he's going to get on a FEMA list now.
That's all right. That's all right.
Well, I know I'm not living up to what he thought he'd see here. I'm just depressed watching this happen. So, I mean, I just hope that police chiefs around the country will uphold the Bill of Rights and Constitution.
Well, I can tell you I spent a lot of time. I meet with my colleagues in the major state chiefs meetings around the country, and it would take a lot for us to say we wanted the military to be patrolling our streets. It would take the sky will actually literally have to be falling before we would say that. So we are peace officers. That's why we write peace officer on our ID cards to remind our officers that we're all about keeping the peace, maintaining peace, restoring peace, and securing the peace here. I think that American law enforcement, although not perfect and not equally as good around the country. You know, people like to say we're a bad police department in Austin. I like to tell them, you know, the reason you think we're bad is you have no point of reference. I'll take them on field trips where I can tell you they'll be very thankful to be police in the
city. Oh, I'll tell you where it's bad is New York City.
Well, I'm not going to tell you which ones I think, But I will tell you that I tell my critics, if you have no point of reference, you can't appreciate what you truly have. I believe...
Have you been around New York cops?
I've been in all over the country.
I mean, some of them call in and some of them are nice.
Oh,
but
they've got some...
But I mean, you talk about just generally... Yeah. I mean, it's literally like gang members in uniforms.
Well, I mean, they've got a lot of good police officers, just like I'm sure there's some that aren't.
Yeah, but you know that's what you're talking about. New York is unbelievable. I've talked to Austin police that have asked directions and been told, do I look like a phone book?
Well, yeah, I've experienced some of that before from some of the departments. But I always tell people that take a look at who the Department of Justice, at some of the departments that are under investigation and end up in consent decrees. Those are bad departments. We were investigated for 4 years as a department because the community demanded an investigation. We provided everything. They took a look at us up and down, side to side. And despite the fact that that same Department of Justice has placed other police agencies under consent decrees because they found patterns and practices of unconstitutional policing or use of excessive force, I'm very proud of the fact that our department withstood that scrutiny, that we actually embraced the scrutiny, that we actually considered the DOJ as an extra set of eyes and an opportunity for us to do better. And I really believe that now in 2011, quickly approaching 2012, we're a better department as a result of going through that process. And I can say with a straight face that I believe the police department is better today than it was in 2007 before I got here.
Well, I have to agree, but I still don't like the police taking blood.
I know, but you know what? You've been around, you know, you say you're public enemy number one. Have we ever taken your blood?
No.
Have we ever stopped you and taken you to jail?
No.
Okay, there you have it. If you obey the law, if you don't drink and drive, you don't have to worry about us. Quite frankly, when you sign up for your driver's license, you write implied consent that you agree to take...
No, I understand all that. I'm just saying that, you know, looking at all this... Well, I mean, what you just said, though, the Department of Justice, I happen to know, and it's covered in this film, The Noble Lie with the Survivors, that the head of the Justice Department was the deputy head of the Justice Department and was intimately involved covering up this false flag terror event. Okay, Chief.
I haven't seen that.
It's a new documentary. I'm selling it. I didn't make it, but I'm in it. The point is that Holder got caught running a false flag. He got caught shipping guns into Mexico to blame it on the Second Amendment. And even when he got caught, he tried to use it against the Second Amendment. Yeah. I mean, I've interviewed the police involved in Oklahoma City who saw the feds. I've interviewed the people that saw the feds planting the bombs. Okay, the feds blew up Oklahoma City. And that's what I'm telling you. The Justice Department came down here to make sure we were good.
Before you slip into unconsciousness, I'd like to have another kiss, another flashing chance at bliss, another kiss.
Well, Chief Art Aceveda is our guest, and he's been nice to come in. He's going to go in and do the nightly news with me this evening, but I'm going to tape it and then air it next week so we don't have a double dose today, kind of space it out. And it's important for us to talk to the police, and it's important for us to talk to the military, because as we've documented today, the foreign banks that have conquered Europe, they now admit that through fraud, have conquered us, and they want to try to use this country as an engine of this new world order. And so we need to talk to the police, bottom line, because the system does want to create a separation between the police and population. I know for a long time policing was thin blue line, kind of, you know, we got to stick together. The public doesn't care about us. I have noticed that you have tried to reverse that, and a lot of police chiefs aren't. So basically, in closing, where did you come from? I mean, you know, how did you become the Austin police chief? What formed you, and why are you trying to actually have the police interface with the public and not have that separation? Because I see a lot of departments actually want that.
Well, I think because, you know, my background, you know, my communist background from a totalitarian government, I think policing is a big, important part of democracy and of freedom. You know, we have to do it right. And I think in order for us to be successful as police officers, we have to have the trust and support and cooperation of the community that we serve. And so I spend a lot of hours every week trying to build that trust and support. And one of the things I think people realize from about me is that we're not always going to agree on everything, but I think that most people know that my heart's in the right place, and that's important.
Yeah, well, certainly spoken from the heart there. What about, you got cut off by the break, Chief, when I was bringing up the Justice Department, our little friendly Oklahoma City bombers, and of course that's quite a claim, but I can prove it. But, I mean, Mr. Holder's been caught shipping the guns into Mexico and caught perjuring himself. So how are they going to come down to Austin and basically, you know, check under our fingernails?
Well, the bottom line is that they have found unconstitutional practices or practices in other cities where they've actually sued police departments to do better. And
that's like when the police department's the Ku Klux Klan or something.
Oh, well, no.
In the 60s.
You know, City of L.A. was put under a consent decree. New Orleans, I believe, is already in a consent decree. I think that Miami, you know, a while back, got sued. I'm not sure which departments, but I know they've been quite a few around the country. So the bottom line is, it's not like they come and just rubber stamp local police agencies. You know, it's kind of, so I'm proud of the fact that we were able to withstand that scrutiny, because I think that although we're not perfect as an organization, the collective heart of our department is good. We have good people, and we're all trying to do the right thing.
But I get federal oversight, but then the states more and more have no oversight. How do we used to, back when we had that, our states elected the senators, the legislatures did, mm-hmm. and they got rid of that with the 17th Amendment. So how do we have a check and balance on the feds?
Well, I think that we all have to pay attention to what's going on. I mean, I'll be honest with you. One of the things I think has really been tough for this country is that we've carved up congressional districts so they're all safe for either the left, the D's or the R's, but they're all safe. The majority of Americans were pragmatic people. We like to find the middle ground. And so I think that one of the things that has made it challenging for us as Americans is that, you know, when you don't have to answer to the voters because you're in a safe seat, you get to have extreme views, and you don't have to be pragmatic, and you don't have to try to find that common ground with everybody. And so I think one of the things that I would like to see as an American is to have congressional districts that are...
Tell you what, finish your statement. Back in 1 minute. We'll be right back. There and get you in the TV interview area, because you got to leave in like 15 minutes. But I didn't want you to be cut off there. Police Chief Arde Cepeda, then we'll go back to the rebroadcast from the first hour with the FEMA camps in America now being manned. They're now activating them. That shows you they're getting ready to really implode things. Just incredible information. But we're here, you know, talking to the Austin Police Chief. And you were finishing up a point.
The point is we're trying to do the right thing. That's it.
No, but you were talking about the legislative districts.
Oh, yeah. That part. I feel that personally, I like to see every congressional district be competitive. That way that it's a lot easier to, when we're not happy, get rid of people if we're not happy with their performance.
What do you think about the two-party dictatorship?
Well, that's part of the problem when they divide up the Congress where they're safe districts for both parties. That's when I think it makes it a little bit more challenging for our voices to be heard.
What do you think of Ron Paul?
I like some of the things he has to say, some of the things I agree with, some of the things I don't, but he's fun to watch.
In closing, I haven't talked to you since the Joe Stack thing, yeah. And that was certainly a tragedy, but yeah. What was it like being at that event?
Well, the media wanted to turn that into, they wanted me to use a terrorist, you know, this is a terrorist thing so we can scare the heck out of everybody. And my number one goal that day was, once I figured out, we figured out that it appeared to be one person that was angry. That was my cell phone. Somebody's texting me. I'm sorry, I forgot to put it on.
Oh, I don't care.
Once
it made me think, where's my cell phone?
Once we figured out early on in that investigation, it appeared to be an isolated incident. I felt that my number one responsibility was to ensure and reassure Americans they didn't have to worry about a bunch of little small planes going all over the country crashing into buildings.
Yeah. Well, I do have a love-hate relationship with you, because you're a nice guy. You come in, you make a lot of good points, you're charismatic, you have a good vibe. I don't feel like you're a bad guy when I'm thanks. Around you. I'm not here to like Ram Poobah judging you. It's just that you don't have that normal, you know, fake authoritarian thing that a lot of police chiefs try to put on. It's just, you know, but I did notice that the media did try to get you to turn it into a fear-mongering, Al-Qaeda's under every table, let's get hysterical. And actually, if that would have gotten hyped up bigger, copycats probably would have started doing it.
And I know that some people tried. I got some criticism because they said had that been a Middle Eastern person, I would have termed it terrorism. And I can tell you, just like I told some of these advocacy groups, that absolutely not. It had nothing to do with race. It was basically, you call it whatever you want, but I'm not going to use a term.
Well, he went postal with an airplane.
He went postal with an airplane. He was angry at the Catholic Church. He was angry at his own family. He burnt down his own house. This man was angry at the world. And he used the word terrorism that day. It would have created a lot of anxiety for a lot of Americans. And I wasn't about to do that when I knew it was an isolated incident by one crazy guy who went postal.
Well, that's certainly good news that you did that. You know, Rob Dew has been in a lot of bands, and actually Joe Stack was years ago in a band, and he said the guy was really nice.
But
didn't really talk.
Right.
He said he was nice, showed up, did a good job playing the music.
Yeah.
Is Janet Reno sending you a text message?
And, I'm getting some interesting texts, but for being on here, I'm glad I turned it on.
When the feds were here, I said, hey, I'm friendly. Arde Savedo's been on the show. And they said, he also goes on the Trailer Park Show.
That's an actual quote.
Oh,
I went there once.
Well, they're nice guys, but the point is the FBI knew that. And I was like,
you know what?
They're like, do you watch that?
It's a free country. It's a free country.
That actually happened. Hey, what are you going to do with your tar and feather kit?
I'm going to put it on you right now before we leave.
No, I think you should like, For Halloween, wear a big diaper on 6th Street and put this on your back.
Look, Jones, I already have enough people that don't like me. Don't give anybody any ideas.
We can let the other officers tar and feather you. All right. Arde Savedo, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
All right.
Nice to see you. Happy holidays.
Hey, thank you. All right. We're going to interview him on the TV next if we can get him wrangled in there. God bless you, folks. Big news coming up on the FEMA camps. We'll be back tonight, 7 o'clock Central, prisonplanet.tv. Be sure and join us there. Great job to the crew.